Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future is going to be here talking about some of his recent writings over there at Our Future blog. And also Laura Lavin, president of the League of Women Voters of Delaware County, going to be here talking about the redistricting scheme going on right underneath our noses. And again, you know, you look at this redistricting stuff, and it's anywhere where you allow it to be political, anywhere where you allow it to be partisan, somebody's going to get screwed. It's about protecting incumbents. It's about making sure that the current holders of that office are well taken care of and comfortable. For me, I think the redistricting should be about making sure that you have equal number of constituents, but also have competitive races in areas where it's possible. I don't even think you should be looking at voter registration. I don't think you should be looking at historical anything. I think you should be looking at solely the number of people. And it should be in a square, in a circle, whatever. It should not look like a spider. It should not look like a Rorschach test. As we've seen some of these districts look like, it should be compact. It should keep neighborhoods intact. We shouldn't be splitting cities. We shouldn't be splitting neighborhoods. So it'll be interesting to talk to her about that. So you'll remember yesterday we talked about the fake news on Fox, people saying that the shooter was an Occupy shooter. Well, turns out he's Jesus. I didn't realize Jesus was going to come back as a sniper. Now, you know, the religious people would always say he's going to come back with a sword. I think he fooled them, came back as a sniper. But he's being held, going to be charged with attempting to assassinate the president. And I don't know if you saw the video. Evidently, he had sent a video to Oprah Winfrey saying that there's so much more that God needs me to express to the world. It's just not a coincidence that I look like Jesus. I am the modern-day Jesus Christ that you've all been waiting for. Again, and I go back to this idea that do we really have a picture? Do we have a snapshot of Jesus? Do we have his baby pictures? Do we have his photo? Do we have his photo ID? Did we get his driver's license? Because I don't know that's what he looked like. That's what popular artists seem to think, quite possibly. I don't know. So there you go. Jesus was trying to shoot up the White House. And congratulations to our friends in the GOP. Congratulations to the Republican House leadership. You have officially wasted yet another day. As they moved forward on this balanced budget amendment that ultimately went down 261 to 165. They couldn't even get the same number of votes they had back in 1995 when it wasn't as polarized. Back then in 95, you had 300 people who voted for it. Some folks dropped off. In fact, a couple of Republicans dropped off. Surprisingly, Paul Ryan, one of the people who dropped off the list, along with Justin Amash from Pennsylvania, Louis Gohmert from Texas, and David Dreyer, who pretty influential Republican. 25 turncoat blue dog Democrats, they voted in favor of it. So there you go. The amendment needed 290 votes to pass. Obviously, did not happen. But, you know, the reality is, had this happened, the reality is you'd end up killing some 15 million jobs. You'd ended up shrinking our economy. And these are pretty well-documented numbers. You'd have shrunk our economy by about 17%. And nobody, again, has explained to me why that's a good idea. Nobody has explained to me how shrinking the economy is going to help our debt problems, how shrinking the economy is going to help our revenue problems. It just doesn't make any sense. What needs to happen and what we should be focusing every single day on, instead of this ridiculous, well, you need a balanced budget amendment, or we need a new gun law, or we need to reaffirm something we've reaffirmed already. Again, more stall, more delay, more wasted time, more, hey, let's whip people into a frenzy. Let's get them all lathered up over what? Nothing. Show me the jobs. Why do we not? Everybody agrees infrastructure. Everybody. It is bipartisan. It is across the board, across the aisle, across the street, across the nation. Everybody gets it. Build roads and bridges. Why are we doing that? You know, we went through the jobs bill, and again, this is another one of those Democratic cave jobs. They pulled out all the things the Republicans agreed with, and they said, okay, we'll pass that. The trade agreements, you know, making sure that we give contractors all their money back so we don't have anything to hold in case they don't pay their taxes. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. All the stuff we agree on. Except the funding of the transportation bill. Folks. This is pretty simple stuff. We've got over 9% unemployed. There are people who need jobs. I know some of the building trades have 30% of their members sitting on the bench. Let's get them into the game. And they make pretty good wages. And we should be encouraging those kind of wages. Why? So you can tax those kind of wages. See, it's like a snowball. You ever see a snowball go down a hill like in the cartoons? Starts off real small, and as it keeps going, it grows bigger. That's how the economy works. You start off small, you start getting a little activity, that activity turns into more activity and more until eventually you've got a steaming red-hot economy. To go back to the Clinton years. Raise taxes, put some more money into building, put some money back into the economy, got things going, the IT boom happened, all things were pumping on all cylinders. And what happens? You get Bush to come in and say, well, we don't need any of this anymore. Here's all the money. We're gonna give all this money away. So again, congratulations to our Republican friends. Another wasted day, another day of not addressing our jobs issue. So the thing I'm probably going to spend a lot of time on today. I'm really kind of ticked off. I'm really ticked off today, and I really couldn't wait to get in here to just vent over this latest WTO case. For those of you who don't know, the WTO is the World Trade Organization. One of these groups that, for all intent and purposes, is there solely to steal your sovereignty. They claim it's going to be the place where we're going to solve all of our world problems and trade is the end of war. Nonsense. Today it came out, thanks to NAFTA, that Canada and Mexico, that they are not going to be required to put country of origin labels on meat that they import into this country. So what happened is Mexico and Canada claim that the U.S. policy of label of origin, you know, you got to have the country of origin, was discriminating somehow against their cattle. Somehow it was lowering the prices of our cattle and restricting trade. And the dispute panel, because they go in front of this secret tribunal. We don't get to know who they are. They don't tell who the judges are. You get to know none of it. We can't go sit and watch. It's not on TV. C-SPAN isn't covering it. But they ruled today that the labeling measure, it violated the trade agreement, because it gave less favorable treatment to imported cattle and hogs. So it is it's an unfair trade barrier. And understand what these trade deals do. The whole idea of the trade deal is to seek the least restrictive trade barrier possible, the least restrictive rule. And we've lost a bunch of these. You know, the Charlie Tuna case is one of the first ones and one of the really big ones. In California, they said, you know what? When the fishermen go out and they catch the tuna, they got to use nets that aren't going to catch up the dolphins. So, you know, the people of California, the citizens of that state, said, we want dolphin-free tuna. We'd like to have tuna. Well, Mexico took us to the tribunal, and we lost. Said California doesn't have the right to pass that kind of law. Because in Mexico, they use the dolphins just right along with tuna there, and they don't want to have to worry about being part of this. So, you know, I look at all of this stuff, and it's blowing my mind going, I don't get to know where this stuff is made. I don't get to know if the beef I bought at the local butcher came from Mexico. I don't get to know if it came from Canada. I mean, it's kind of silly, don't you think? And, you know, they're trying to spin it. Well, you know, we're going to try and do some other things. We lost. And yet we passed three more of these insane-type trade agreements. At what point do you wake up and say, enough is enough? At what point do you wake up and say, you know what, I've been screwed enough in this deal. These trade agreements are not working for us. You and me, that is. They're working fine for the big multinationals. Because, you know, most of the companies down in Mexico that import, you know, cattle and pork and you know, hogs and cattle in here to the U.S. are U.S. companies. So they're doing just fine. They're going there to get away from USDA. They're going down there to get away from regulation. And the Republicans will tell you, well, this is the reason we need to get rid of regulations. They're job killers. Well, I'd like to know that my meat reaches a certain level. I'd like to know that it was handled in a certain way. I'd like to know that it is what it is. Because here's the thing. If I eat that and it kills me, what recourse do I have? None. Anyway, going to take a quick break. Today we're going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. We'll talk a little bit about China. And a lot about privatization. Back after this.
Come to talk. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The 99% asserted our right to free speech and assembly from Wall Street in New York to San Francisco and dozens of other cities on Thursday. In a nationwide Occupy Civil Disobedience Day of Action, thousands marched on Wall Street, blocking all stock exchange entry points at one time. As police arrested hundreds and used physical force to try to quash them, the 99% reclaimed Liberty Square by taking down police barricades. People's mics were used at the barricades to express frustration at an unfair economy. Occupy Wall Street's live web stream described police attempting to use the barricades to drive protesters away from Liberty Square.
Cocked his arms back, lunged forward, and knocked a photographer to the ground. I then watched another member of the press be grabbed by the arm and thrown about 10 feet.
And you can see the officers and the helmets and the visors are lining the barricades on this side. There's a sign. It says, arrest one of us, two more appear. You can't arrest an idea.
Unions organized a rally in New York's Foley Park, and 99 protesters planned to occupy the Brooklyn Bridge and be arrested. Thousands also marched in San Francisco, where Occupy protesters took over a Bank of America branch. Chanting and carrying signs, they set up a tent in the lobby. Police arrested about 100 people. It took 40 cops 4 hours to clear Occupy people from that bank. In Portland, Oregon, Occupy protesters closed Steel Bridge. Labor joined and supported the nationwide Occupy Day of Action on Thursday. Out-of-pocket costs for health care have jumped substantially over the last decade. Jesse Russell reports.
With more employers shifting the burden of health care costs to employees, the cost of health insurance premiums skyrocketed by 63% between 2003 and 2010. A new study by the Commonwealth Fund found that the cost of providing a family insurance plan jumped by 50% during those 8 years. The study researched state-by-state costs and found across the board out-of-pocket premiums increases. The highest premiums paid by workers were in Maine, Texas, Florida, and Virginia, while Michigan, Montana, and Vermont had some of the lowest. The highest was Wyoming, where workers pay on average $1,479 for health care premiums. In 29 of the states, the out-of-pocket costs broke the $1,000 mark. The Commonwealth Fund said that if costs continue to increase at the current rate by the year 2020, the premium for a family plan could reach $24,000.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America, 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. I look at what's going on yesterday, the big day of action. A couple people we know got arrested. And you see all of the arrests across the country. And our friend Dave Johnson wrote over at the Our Future blog, a government that says corporate money is speech, dispatches lines of police to stop actual human being citizens from actually speaking out. He writes, it's all right there in front of us. Wall Street got bailouts. The rich got tax cuts. Corporations got to buy elections. People got job loss. People got home loss, pension loss, health care lost. Protesters got crackdowns. And that pretty much sums it up for what happened yesterday. Dave, great article, brother.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I enjoyed writing that.
You know, you look at all of the things, all of the arrests, and to me, it all seems senseless.
I was at the Occupy Oakland when they marched on the port that day, and I got to tell you, this is a big deal. I was in a major city that was completely owned, occupied by people who were protesting against these policies, and then this huge march down to the port, and that was just in Oakland that day. It was all over the country, and as you know, yesterday, even more all over the country. And I understand there was a huge march to the Brooklyn Bridge last night. So this is not a small thing going on. It's going on across the country. It's a big deal. And, I mean, they can, you know, try to play it down or, you know, say all these protesters are disgusting and, you know, all those things they say to make people ashamed.
Yep.
Or afraid to go down or to look down on the protesters. They could do that all they want, but this is like the news report you just had on said, when you arrest one, two more will show up. Or the comedian Lee Camp, if you've ever seen, he has these things called Moments of Clarity on YouTube. And he had the best one. He said throwing pepper spray or pepper spraying occupiers is like throwing water on gremlins. As soon as you do that, there's 10 more. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, going after them, the arrests, just seems senseless to me. You know, at some point, the more you do this, and as the guy points out, the more you beat up these people, the more pepper spray and the more you crack down, the more you're going to draw people to it and draw attention to it, because at the end of it, nobody likes that kind of heavy-handed authoritarian rule.
Well, they're betting on the Chinese approach. Don't forget that Tiananmen Square, they killed 3,000 of them that were trying to get democracy, and then people backed off and they won. To some extent, I think they're betting on that. I think they're so afraid that they're going for the heavy-handed crackdown here because it's so obvious. The bailouts pretty much made a lot of things obvious that they're going to use that wealth and power they have against us to get, you know, if it hit the fan with that financial collapse, and they went to the Congress and they gave them, you got a couple days, they said, and you're going to bail us out. And remember that document that Treasury Secretary Paulson had on that that said that there will be no authorities will be allowed to review these decisions of the Treasury Secretary to give this money. Nobody will be held accountable.
Yep.
I think there's a certain amount of that, but every day we're seeing more and more of the information's getting out, at least that's explaining more and more of what's going on. And I want to talk a little bit about this report that came out about the companies that are avoiding taxes.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but you brought up China.
Go ahead.
And well, I mean, you wrote some really great stuff over at Our Future, and one of it is on this China report that I talked about the other night extensively. And talking about the idea that they want to crack down like the Chinese did. China invested $83.5 billion on domestic surveillance. That's over $2 billion more than their entire military budget.
Right. And by the way, they just sold some of this special domestic surveillance technology to Iran, just in case people want to get the idea of what China's about. But they actually had a phone call today. I hosted this phone call with someone from the China Commission today with bloggers, where they talked about they did a summary of this report. And now back up a minute. This China Commission is a commissioned by Congress, and it is bipartisan. It's 12 members, and it's Democrats and Republicans, and they come to remarkable agreement on this stuff that's going on with China. You know, there's the trade thing we've had going on with China, but there's also national security implications, and they're looking at the amount of cyber attacks that have been coming out of China.
Yep.
Companies, on the trade side, you hear about that companies are forced by China to hand over technology. If they want to do any business in China, they have to hand over their technology, so it's China's now. But
yeah, but whose fault is that?
The ones that don't agree to that, what happens is their computers get cracked into and they just take the technology. You know, that kind of stuff's going on. So it's not just a trade war here that's going on. It's getting heavy-handed. So now they could be a great partner, don't get me wrong, if they would just take some of that huge amount of money they've accumulated from selling to us without buying from us. You know, trade is you buy and you sell. They haven't been trading. They've just been selling to us and gathering up all that money instead of buying from us. If they took that money and bought American-made goods, and I've said it on your show before, it would have this tremendous effect on our economy, but then our economy, we would buy even more from them. So right. It'd be great for them, too, if they did that.
Yeah, but what they're doing is they're not buying our products. They're just buying
That's
our
right.
companies,
That's
and they're
right.
buying us.
They're not
us.
Playing a trade game. They're not playing an economic game. They're not using trade to lift up their people as it could. They're playing a different kind of game. They're playing a power game with us. And the China Commission, this report, they're warning that, look, we're going to have to stop footsieing around on this stuff, because if they're not trading with us, if they're just dangling these carrots of, you're going to get all this great business from us, too, and then not giving that business, they're up to something else. And our country as a country has to pay attention to that.
Absolutely.
Just in case. I mean, it's a national security implication, too.
Yep. You look at this report, and it's, when you couch it in terms of this is six Republicans, six Democrats, they've come to a bipartisan, they came to an agreement. And you look at the first line of the executive summary, China is now the second largest economy in the world and the world's largest manufacturer.
Yeah.
Something that we
right.
held for over 100 years, we've just now given away.
Yeah, we gave it away. We gave it away for money. You know, you sell a factory, you can make a lot of money selling the factory once it's all built and ready to go. And that's what's happened. 50,000 factories in the decade of Bush.
Yeah, and they go on to talk about a little bit more, you know, because we have this idea that, well, China just makes all that cheap stuff, all the, you know, all the stuff that we can't make here, all that the little trinkety stuff, all the little whatnots and widgets. But they say the advanced technology sectors, China allowed us to import $13.4 billion of advanced technology products into China. You know how much they imported to us? $81.1 billion.
That's right. And the advanced technologies, the stuff we're starting to be not able to make here now.
Yep.
Even our Defense Department is ordering chips and stuff from China. And then, surprise, they're finding out certain key components, the components that we might have to use, like if China were to invade Taiwan or something, they don't work. What a surprise.
Yep. And that's scary stuff, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You're listening
to
the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. Lots of great articles he's got over there. And this one in particular, how the wealthy companies like Verizon avoid paying taxes. And, you know, you go through and we've been talking about on this program for years now, but you go on and you look at Verizon, you say, look, this is another one of these companies. They're gonna dangle that carrot of a couple of jobs. And it's all about, hey, what can you give them?
Well, yeah, and there's a reason to focus is on Verizon. I was on a call this week that was put on to highlight this study that you might have heard about, but if you go to ourfuture.org and read this post, you can go look at the full study of the number of companies that aren't paying any taxes at all. And, in fact, hugely profitable companies like Verizon that actually get money from the government on top of not paying taxes. The reason the focus is on Verizon is because Verizon, with this huge, huge profitable company in the billions, is cracking down on their workers. They're making all this money, but they're asking their workers to take pay cuts, benefit cuts, and everything. And they're represented by a union, so 40,000 of them at first went out on strike just to get the company to start negotiating seriously, and now they're negotiating. So that's the reason Verizon was the focus.
Yeah, and I hear there's talk of a potential lockout coming at some point.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That wouldn't be good.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's how these companies play the game, though.
Hardball.
Yeah, I mean, it's what it's about.
Starve
I mean,
the family.
You know, the report that you talked about, Citizens for Tax Justice put out, and looked at 280 of the Fortune 500 companies and found 30 of them paid no taxes over the 3 years of the study. In fact, we gave them money. And I look at this. I don't even know what Pepco Holdings does, but I know we gave them almost 58% of their profit back. So if they made a dollar, we gave them 58 cents back. So they made $1.58. How do I get on that kind of gig?
I know. How do you? Well, the way you get on that kind of gig is you buy a couple of Congress people, you know, basically.
Well, like
actually, if you saw Abramoff on 60 Minutes, he explained how you do it. You go in and you talk to the staffer and you say, if you want to get a really good high-paying job with me later, you play ball now. And then they insert this stuff into these tax bills. Here's an aspect of what Verizon does, just so you can understand. One of the ways these companies do it is all these cities and states are starving because they've had tax cuts. Okay.
Yep.
You give tax cuts to the rich. You get talked into tax cuts for the rich in order to, they say, oh, well, this will provide jobs if we cut taxes for the rich, and then you're starved. So along comes a Verizon. They're going to open up a call center or something. So they start getting cities, counties, and states to bid against each other to get that call center. Now, they go to, you know, I don't know what cities, but and you see companies like Westinghouse do this too.
Our American Greetings.
You see them all do it. They get these areas bidding against each other. Well, we'll lower taxes, and the other one comes in is, we won't charge you any taxes, and we'll give you these economic development funds too. And you go back and forth. And so pretty soon one of them gets it, and what they've done, they got the jobs, and they've defunded their school system, their police,
yep,
their fire, and their roads in that area because they wanted those jobs so bad that they paid all this, essentially gave Verizon the moon to come there.
Yep, and you know, I had a congressman on the program, Todd Platts, Republican down in this area, and I asked him about this specifically. I go, what is it, can't Congress do something under the Commerce Clause? Can't they regulate, jobs being taken from one area to another under the guise of, we're gonna give you these huge, this huge bounty if you bring these jobs here, because it's only killing us, as a nation. I mean, it's really a dumb practice. It's like we're beating each other up. The 50 states are competing with each other, beating the snot out of each other before we even get into the global market. I mean, if Mike Tyson got punched in the face by every single guy walking to the ring, I don't think he'd do real well in the ring.
That's right. And here's a key thing. This is why it's important for Congress to do something, because those jobs were coming here anyway, but they got to use the lever of those jobs to defund schools and things like that. And because all the companies do this all around the country, all the areas wind up, not only have they cut taxes, you know, for the rich, so they're starving in the first place, but now they're cutting out all of their school systems and everything else locally. But the same number of jobs are coming into the economy anyway. They're just letting these corporations play everybody against each other.
Yeah, I look at a company where I went to high school. American Greetings was in the city of Brooklyn, Ohio there. And just recently, yep, they shook down the state of Ohio for, I think it was $105 million.
Yep.
And then they turned around and they shook down the local communities. They told the city of Brooklyn, what are you going to give us? Went to the other communities in the neighborhood, what are you going to give us? And eventually moved somewhere else where they sweetened the pot. And as you said, it's the schools that suffer, it's the police that suffer, it's the public services that suffer.
And that's Rick Perry says, look how I brought all these jobs to Texas. That's how he did it. You know, there were no new jobs created. That's so important to understand that these were just jobs that were shifted, okay, because Texas defunded, and so Texas has the highest rate of uninsured. Texas has the highest rate of this and of that and poverty and all of these problems that Texas has. As they make their people poorer, and then he goes out and he brags, well, we got this company to move here, but he did it by making their own people poorer.
Yep, I could easily solve our jobs problem. Get rid of the minimum wage, pay a buck an hour, everybody will have a job. Granted, they won't be able to eat, but they'll have a job.
And that's still nonsense because if you look at the bigger picture, then if everybody's got a $1 job, then nobody's buying anything in the bigger economy. All you're doing is taking all the jobs you have, lowering what everybody gets paid, and so the economy has to shrink as a result. And that's what's going on now with these budget cuts in Washington. They're talking about how we're going to cut back this and cut back that. If you look at the larger economy, all you're doing is making everybody poorer so that a few people can get richer. But the whole larger picture of the economy shrinks and loses more jobs. So you're not gaining jobs. It's just like if you make Mississippi won't allow unions or whoever, you know, or somebody's got a lower minimum wage, so all the companies move the jobs there, then the people who are there are poorer, and the people who are where they were making a little more money have lost their jobs. So there's
race
less
to the bottom.
People buying stuff.
Yep, it is an absolute race to the bottom. And that's the idea, I think. I think the idea is to create a country of haves and have-nots. And they're doing a remarkable job.
The idea is to not look at that bigger picture. The idea is you've got so many smaller, greedy units fighting each other to get, you know, the top people in those smaller, greedy units get more money. They don't care if the larger economy does worse.
Yep.
That's the problem, is the job of government is to care if the larger economy gets worse. But for them to get their little bit more, they say, oh, we need to get rid of government, because government's standing in the way of them getting a little bit more at the expense of everyone else. But the point is that if everyone else does better, everyone does better. But they don't see that. They just want their little bit more for them at the expense of the rest of us. That's where government comes in and has to watch the bigger picture.
Hooray for me and the heck with everyone else. Yep. Dave Johnson, always great talking with you. Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org is the website. Dave's got some excellent pieces over there. And the one I didn't get to talk to that I wanted to on privatization nightmares, I suggest you go over there and take a look at it.
That one's at Alternet only. I did that for Alternet.
Oh, that's right. All right. Well,
yeah. Alternet. Go over there. It's popular on Alternet today. I just came out this morning. Thanks.
Beautiful. Dave, thanks for the time, brother.
See you later.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
The factory closed, it just couldn't compete. This lady paper switch out across the sea. Put your little town on the map. Over from a beetle, a Chinese grandpa to Walmart. The killer the country soul.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at therickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Oh, joy! The generous gods of political commentary love me. The polygods have delivered a magnificent gift for me, Newt. Yes, Newt Gingrich is back. Just 3 months ago, the presidential campaign of this corrupt, super-bloated ego on legs had imploded, and commentators like me lost a surefire source of goofy material. Lo and behold, though, as Rick Perry stumbled over his own brain and as Herman Cain fumbled with Libya and several women, the Newt has been ascendant, now topping some polls in the GOP contest. Explaining this exalted status, the former House Speaker was typically modest. "I don't think there's anybody in the race with my background," he bloated. "I have a Ph.D. in American history. I've written 24 books, 7 documentary films." Yes, and he's also been fined $300,000 by his own House Ethics Committee for official corruption. Speaking of which, after an inglorious exit from Congress, Gingrich parlayed his legislative connections into the lucrative life of a Washington influence peddler, carrying water for such corporate favor seekers as IBM and Microsoft. Now we learn that he also quietly did chores for mortgage giant Freddie Mac, a firm he had blasted publicly. He even condemned Barack Obama in 2008 for taking campaign donations from the corporation's executives. Gingrich recently tried to dismiss his own involvement with Freddie Mac, saying his role there was short and minor. Really? No. It turns out he worked with them for 6 years and was paid at least $1.6 million. Nonetheless, filled with his own wondrousness, Newt insists that voters will actually appreciate his work as a hired huckster for corporate interests. "It reminds people that I know a great deal about Washington," he said, cluelessly. This is Jim Hightower saying, thank you, political gods. This is going to be fun.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.com.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the Dark Ages.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So it looks like the super-duper, super-secret committee, looks like they're in trouble. Doesn't look like anything's going to be happening. And I got an email earlier today from the Democrats. And any time you get an email from the Democrats that with the title line saying, stop the super committee sellout, I was expecting it. I was kind of going, uh-oh, here's the cave. Here's where they do what they've always done, and that's give in. But here's the thing. It didn't happen today, and I was expecting it. I thought the Democrats, I thought Max Backdoris was going to cave. He wanted to, but it just, I think the Republicans have overplayed the hand because the latest offer, the Republicans have offered to cut $643 billion from the deficit. And that, I guess, is going to keep some of the automatic defense spending and some of the non-discretionary spending in place. Also, what they would have done is they would have increased tax revenue by $3 billion. So they wanted to cut $643 billion and only raise $3 billion worth of revenue by closing the jet loophole. So, you know, the big CEO, when they fly around in their jet, they get a little tax bonus, $3 billion. They offered to do away with that. The wealth class, yeah, we can do without. And the Democrats said, do we look stupid? Did I wake up with a tattoo across my forehead? Dumb? And, Max Baucus, I think kind of gets it right. He says, we're in a time in American history where everyone's afraid. Afraid of losing their job to move towards the center, is what he told the Washington Post. He said, a deadline is insufficient. He says, you've got to have people who are willing to move. And the reality is any agreement is going to upset people on all sides of the aisle. And I've always believed that from a negotiating standpoint, if you walk away from the table and you're happy with what you got, either you're a fool and you don't know what it is you wanted, or it's probably a bad agreement. But in this instance, everybody walks away with something. I get that. But the Republicans want it all. They want Kate and Edith, too. And the reality is fortunately, in this case, the Democrats haven't caved, which is why I don't think this super committee is going to come up with anything. I think November 23rd is going to come and go. We're not going to have a deal. They're going to figure out how to pull back from the triggers because they are going to be very hard on defense spending and some other things. And then you got to worry what happens down the road in 2013. And that's something for a whole nother discussion. So I think the election of 2012 has to be it. And Pat Toomey, who is a member of the super committee, said that there are fundamentally and deeply held views across the American political spectrum and here in Congress. He says if it were easy, it would have been done a long time ago. He said, we'd have done it by now. The super committee idea, if you remember. And I got to tell you, right from the start, I thought it was a screwed up idea. I thought it was dumb from the beginning that you're going to put all this power in the hands of these 12 chosen ones. But it was supposed to be a different idea. And, pretty simply, you were going to have a deadline. It was going to be a hard, fast deadline. It was going to be done in secret, so there'd be no transparency. You wouldn't have cameras all over the time. And they would be able to force an up or down vote and a filibuster-proof vote in Congress. So it was one of these things. It was just going to either you're going to accept it or you weren't. And we can't even get to the point to where you're going to offer something. That's how remarkable this is. So November 23rd, we're on the brink of the deadline. Which is why I do believe the next election is when we're going to decide this. We have to decide what kind of country we're going to be. We have to decide if this country is going to be able to pay its bills. We're going to have to decide if we're going to take care of the elderly, if we're going to take care of senior citizens. We have to decide this. Or if we're a country that, has some pride in the fact that we have a billionaire class and the largest billionaire class in the history of the world. If that's what our national pride if that's the thing we're going to pound our chest over, then we should double down on that. And Bernie Sanders, who I think is just a great senator, they were in the Senate Budget Committee conference room where they were holding a conference, and he's talking about, look, we shouldn't be cutting Social Security. We shouldn't be, doing all these things to destroy, here's what he said.
Here's the issue. The issue is that this country, in fact, does have a serious deficit problem. But the reality is that the deficit was caused by two wars unpaid for. It was caused by huge tax breaks for the wealthiest people in this country. It was caused by a recession as a result of the greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior on Wall Street.
I agree. Right there. He's spot on. Spot on.
And if those are the causes of the deficit and the national debt, I will be damned if we're going to balance the budget on the backs of the elderly, the sick, the children, and the poor. That's wrong.
I absolutely agree. I mean, and that's what they're talking about doing. We want to cut Social Security. We want to cut Medicare. Social Security doesn't add anything to the debt. He goes on to say
the reason that Social Security has engendered so much hatred on the part of many of our right-wing colleagues is because Social Security has worked.
And if you remember, and I've been talking about this, you know, since the beginning of this program, Republicans were in stark opposition. They wanted nothing to do with Social Security from the day it was passed. And they have been working to do everything they can do to destroy it. Even though a lot of Republicans are very happy with it, which is amazing to me that someone would collect Social Security and say, I enjoy the benefit and it works and vote for a Republican. I mean, it's just mind-blowing to me. He finishes up by saying this.
So we are assembled today to say that in this great country, we have a program called Social Security that has worked, that, by the way, just in passing, has a $2.5 trillion surplus, hasn't contributed a nickel to the deficit, can pay out every benefit for the next 25 years. We are not going to allow them to cut Social Security.
And I think that's the point there. Now, on the other side, what you've got is you've got Jim DeMint, who's saying, you know, are we going to be a socialist country like Europe, or are we going to be America? And I'm not even sure what that means. It's exactly, you know, where did you get that from, Jim? Somehow in America, we don't take care of our senior citizens. We don't take care of the sick, the poor. We don't do that. But I thought we were a Christian country. Just a thought. When we come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, do these tax cuts that they want, do they create jobs? What's it going to look like if we do cut Social Security and Medicare? Back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Don't really care about the economy. don't care much about democracy. I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world.
Yeah, because we don't want to be socialists like Europe. We want to be America, America again.
You know, again, you know, you throw that stuff out there, and it's so mindless. I expect it from a conservative. The whole idea, look, at the end of the day, you look at what's going on with our economy. Had we continued on a path where we were slowly growing forward and not on this gut punish and slash mentality, had we kept a lot of those public sector jobs, had we continued to grow the private sector, we would be closer to getting out of the recession, out of the economic trouble that we're in. And, you know, actually growing the economy and shrinking the amount of our debt. I was talking to somebody earlier before I came into the station, and I was going, if we do what the Republicans want, which is a balanced, or what they say they want. I really don't believe they want a balanced budget amendment. I think it's something to titillize the mindless, something that, to lather up their base who have that on the brain. But let's say you did. Let's say you capped your debt at 18%, or you capped your spending at 18% of GDP. And your economy shrinks. So let's take yourself. Let's say I make 50 grand a year, and I cap mine at 18%. That means I'm going to be able to spend $9,000 a year. What happens if I go down to $10,000? What if I go down to $10,000 a year? What if my personal income shrinks that much? What it means is I'm not going to have the ability to do anything to get myself out of the hole that I'm in, and then my debt ratio goes way through the roof, which is basically what's happened here in this country. Our GDP has shrunk. It's constricted. Our bills don't change, but what we're bringing in has. Now, how do you jumpstart that? How do you get that to grow again? That's what we should be talking about. We shouldn't be talking about all this other nonsense. And cutting Social Security is a huge mistake. And all I keep hearing is we need more tax cuts. We need more tax cuts. And the question I ask is, do tax cuts create jobs? Can you show me a specific example where the Bush tax cuts created the jobs that they said they were going to? Because I'm not seeing it. If you remember, Bush himself said, with across the board tax cuts, we're gonna create 1 million new jobs. $550 billion, $550,000 per job. And you know what? It didn't happen. It didn't happen. What happened was they took that money and they invested in places like China. So when you give the upper crust as much as they could possibly want, what do they do with it? They make more money with it for themselves. And I don't see that's a way that you grow an economy. I'm sorry, I'm just not getting the. I guess it's good for them. It absolutely is. But is it good for us? And the answer is no. And talking about Social Security in regard with the debt and the deficit makes really no sense because they're two separate things. As Bernie Sanders said, there's $2.5 trillion sitting there. That is fine for 25 years. It's going to pay out every single penny of everything that it's committed to for the next 25 years. If we do nothing. So why screw with that? Well, because that's something they've been wanting to kill from the beginning. It's something they've wanted destroyed from the start. But if you look at what goes on with this debt commission, let's say nothing happens. What happens in 2013? Well, the Bush handouts expire, right? So that's going to raise taxes on just about everybody. For me, probably a little less than for Warren Buffett. And I'm okay with that. Because then you're going to get money back into the coffers, and maybe we can start talking about infrastructure. Maybe we can start talking about, education. We talked about the other day in Colorado. They're sending kids home with report cards with advertisement on their report cards. Does everything have to have a profit motive? And the more we focus on well, we need to cut. Need cut, 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 cut. They've got us thinking austerity. They've got us thinking cut mode. They don't have us thinking grow mode, which is if they were to have a jobs plan that put people back to work, you would start to see things turn around. You would see the economy expand. GDP would expand. The debt-to-GDP ratio would shrink. I'm not a genius, but this doesn't take a genius to figure out. You look at our trade deals, and I go back to this thing with Mexico and Canada. Really, we don't have the right to demand where the meat comes from that sits in our supermarkets? We don't have the right to demand origin labeling? Really? So if we sign a trade agreement, I mean, think about that for a second. Doesn't that make you nuts? But this is the position that they have put us in. The investor class that sits in our halls of Congress. And it all comes back down, like we talked about yesterday with Buddy Romer, comes back down to the money it takes to get elected. People like you and me, we never get elected to those things because we can't raise that kind of money, which is why I've always been a fan of publicly financed elections. I've always been a fan of instant runoff voting so that I can vote my conscience. This next presidential election, there's going to be Obama. It's probably going to be Romney. I would love to have a third option. And I would love to be able to vote for that third option so that you can begin to push the debate one way or another. And I know my friends on the extreme right would love to be able to vote for Ron Paul. But they know if they vote for Ron Paul as an independent, they've thrown their vote away. So if we had instant runoff voting where you say, you know what? You don't get 50% plus one of the vote, we go back and we retabulate. So you can vote your conscience. I'm going to vote for my number one choice, and then I'm going to vote for number two. And if no one gets 50%, they go and they throw your number one choice out. They go down to number two if you voted for the third candidate so that you have a voice. This is how we expand the voices in Washington. This is how we expand the voices in the state house. What's angering to me is that you've got these people who've got us sold on austerity. Now, look, you got the millionaires. They're a group of patriotic millionaires for fiscal strength. They went to Congress and said, look, you got to tax us more. The guy who is the CEO for Dow Chemical said, look, come on. Everyone over a certain threshold of money, you can define what that is. But I can tell you the highest taxpayers, including me, should be paying more. We're underpaying for our future. Now, this is a huge, huge change from Dow Chemical from the 70s, who the CEO back then said, I long dreamed of buying an island owned by no nation and establishing a world headquarters for Dow Chemical and on truly neutral ground so he could be a company in the U.S. and a company in Japan and a company in Brazil. And we could even pay some natives to get out of the way. Is what the guy said. And now you've got the CEO of the same company saying, look, we're underpaying for our future. And now look, these patriotic millionaires, they're not doing it because, well, we're patriotic, we love our country. No, they're doing it out of self-interest. They know our infrastructure is failing them. They know they're not going to make the millions and billions of dollars in profit with a failing, crumbling infrastructure and an education system that, quite frankly, not what it was. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this redistricting thing, which is, again, you know, more partisanship, more of everything that is wrong with the political system. Right back after this.
con and conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The 99% asserted our right to free speech and assembly from Wall Street in New York to San Francisco and dozens of other cities on Thursday. In a nationwide Occupy Civil Disobedience Day of Action, thousands marched on Wall Street, blocking all stock exchange entry points at one time. As police arrested hundreds and used physical force to try to quash them, the 99% reclaimed Liberty Square by taking down police barricades. People's mics were used at the barricades to express frustration at an unfair economy. Occupy Wall Street's live web stream described police attempting to use the barricades to drive protesters away from Liberty Square.
Cocked his arms back, lunged forward, and knocked a photographer to the ground. I then watched another member of the press be grabbed by the arm and thrown about 10 feet.
You can see the officers and the helmets and the visors are lining the barricades on this side. There's a sign. It says, arrest one of us, two more appear. You can't arrest an idea.
Unions organized a rally in New York's Foley Park, and 99 protesters planned to occupy the Brooklyn Bridge and be arrested. Thousands also marched in San Francisco, where Occupy protesters took over a Bank of America branch. Chanting and carrying signs, they set up a tent in the lobby. Police arrested about 100 people. It took 40 cops 4 hours to clear Occupy people from that bank. In Portland, Oregon, Occupy protesters closed Steel Bridge. Labor joined and supported the nationwide Occupy Day of Action on Thursday. Out-of-pocket costs for health care have jumped substantially over the last decade. Jesse Russell reports.
With more employers shifting the burden of health care costs to employees, the cost of health insurance premiums skyrocketed by 63% between 2003 and 2010. A new study by the Commonwealth Fund found that the cost of providing a family insurance plan jumped by 50% during those 8 years. The study researched state-by-state costs and found across the board out-of-pocket premiums increases. The highest premiums paid by workers were in Maine, Texas, Florida, and Virginia, while Michigan, Montana, and Vermont had some of the lowest. The highest was Wyoming, where workers pay on average $1,479 for health care premiums. In 29 of the states, the out-of-pocket costs broke the $1,000 mark. The Commonwealth Fund said that if costs continue to increase at the current rate by the year 2020, the premium for a family plan could reach $24,000.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind. You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So today there was a hearing on the redistricting scheme going on here in Pennsylvania, and the folks of Occupy Harrisburg were there to show their displeasure. I've seen reports of that, and good on them. I've always been a big fan of direct action. But one of the folks who testified there today, Laura Lavin, she's a representative, government specialist with the League of Women Voters. Laura, thanks for taking time for me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I look at this redistricting, and, you know, anytime, quite simply, anytime you leave it to the politicos, you end up with corruption. You end up with something that, well, doesn't benefit me or you, but them.
Well, that's right. The redistricting process in Pennsylvania and most other states is left up to the politicians. And I don't know that I'd call it corrupt exactly, but obviously they're going to draw maps that are in their self-interest.
Yeah, I'm of the mindset that gerrymandering is a form of political corruption. Just my thought.
Okay.
You know, when they get to pick the voters instead of the voters getting to pick them, I got a problem with that.
So I have a problem with that, yes. I agree.
So, you know, you look at this, and, you know, I look at the 15th senatorial district, and, you know, how can you justify that?
There is no justification for it, other than the fact that, as I understand it, the Senator Pakola, who represents that district now, angered the people of Harrisburg by sponsoring a bill that would authorize the state government to take over Harrisburg.
That too.
And he decided to ask the commission to eliminate Harrisburg from his district. So they did it.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could do that. But, you know, you look at this, and I guess the question then becomes, what should we be doing? I mean, we look at this system, and I think everybody across the political spectrum looks at it and says, you know, I don't want the other side deciding. What would be a rational, sane way of doing this in a way that's constitutional?
Well, we proposed turning the job of redistricting over to a nonpartisan bureau. And these would be people who would draw a map based strictly on criteria of population and compliance with the Voting Rights Act. You can't dilute the voting strength of a minority.
Right.
The districts would be compact. They would be contiguous. They would not take into consideration the residences of incumbent legislators or any other person, and also they would not have access to voting data.
And I think
and
that's
registration data.
Those are two. The voting data to me is huge, because we've gotten to a point now where I think you can almost count votes and figure out who's going to win based on the history of who's voted and their party affiliation. So it makes that whole shimmying around and the spiders that we see and the Rorschach test pictures that we see, it makes that well.
Well, the thing is that now we have this sophisticated software. Which enables the politicians to virtually cherry pick their voters. They can look at the map, and I sometimes say they could, you know, split a house in two, you know, and give one half of it to the Republican member of the House and one half of it to the Democratic member of the House.
Yeah,
it's that sophisticated.
In fact, you know, in this latest redistricting, they've actually cut a fairly small little, what is it, Swarthmore borough? They've actually cut that in half?
That happens to be the borough where I live.
Oh, okay.
It's a college town. We have, I'm not exactly sure of the exact population, but it's between 6,000 and 7,000 people. And it would make up ideal size of a house district in Pennsylvania after the new census would be about 62,000. So the borough of Swarthmore would make up a little more than a tenth of that. And yet they split the borough in two. There was no justification for it. The borough has been in one house district for as long as anybody can remember. And all of a sudden they decided to split the southern half of the borough from the northern half of the borough and put them in two different house districts.
Is there any rational justification for that, or is there?
Well, the rational justification, as I can see it, is that the only rational justification is that the borough of Swarthmore has, in recent years, become heavily Democratic. And the outcome of the vote in the borough is virtually guaranteed to be majority Democratic.
So they ceded it to a Democrat.
And this is a Republican-drawn map that was approved, and I think they just split the borough and said, we'll dilute the Democratic vote to make District 161, House District 161, safer for the Republican incumbent. He'll have an easier time getting reelected.
You know, Laura, that's the kind of stuff that turns people away from politics. I mean, when we have these conversations and you see this kind of stuff going on, you know, it's that kind of messaging that where people go, ah, I don't want anything to do with them. They're all crooks. None of them are any good. Are there any states around the country that do things differently? I mean, I look at Nevada, for instance. They had a panel of two Democrats, two Republicans, and an independent. And, in fact, they just came up with what most people are saying is a fairly reasonable map. And the governor tried to throw the independent, tried to impeach her off the panel.
Right. I think, was that in Nevada or Arizona?
I mean Arizona. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. The governor did try to throw the chairman out. So, you know, these are the kinds of games that are being played. California has an interesting system. They're putting it in, using it for the first time in this redistricting round. They have an independent commission, it's made up of citizens. It can't be anybody that currently holding public office. They had a rather elaborate selection process that they went through to select this panel of citizens. I forget the size of the panel. I think it's 9 or 15 or something like that. And they're the ones that are drawing the maps. And so I think that we're going to look to California to see what the outcome of that process is and see whether this can be a model for redistricting in Pennsylvania and some other states.
Yeah, I know some other folks have said that Iowa has a very good way of drawing their lines as well.
Yeah, we proposed an amendment to the Constitution in 2008 that was based on the Iowa model, and that was the Iowa model was that they turn the redistricting over to a nonpartisan bureau. It's something related to what we call the Legislative Reference Bureau. These people, as I say, do not use any of the kind of data I was talking about, the registration data, the homes of incumbents, or anything else.
They are not
even allowed to talk to the politicians.
That sounds good to me. Is there any way of going about changing it to an Iowa model or a California model?
We'd have to amend our constitution.
That's what I was going to ask you.
And because the current process is embedded in our Pennsylvania constitution, it was adopted in 1968, I believe. And it was considered to be reform because it was supposed to be bipartisan. But as we've seen, the process is anything but fair. It may be fair to the politicians, but it's not fair to the voters.
Right. You know, in looking at ours, I see you have, two Democrats, two Republicans, and someone who's appointed. Who appoints the chairman?
Well, under the Constitution, the four legislative leaders, the House, the majority and minority leaders of the House,
right,
and the majority and minority leader of the Senate make up the commission, four members of the commission, and they're supposed to select a chairman or a chair. If they can't agree, then the Supreme Court selects the chair. And so that's what happened this year. They did not agree. So the Supreme Court appointed Judge McEwen to be the chair of the commission. He happens to be a Republican. The thing about having this system is that in Pennsylvania, we elect our judges in partisan elections.
Yep.
So the judges themselves are not free from partisan bias. And so this is, it's clearly not a fair process.
Last question I've got for you. You know, what's drawn now? What's going forward now? Is this a done deal? Any way to change it? Any way to stop it? Or is this just...
Well, we can... this is a preliminary plan. It was adopted October 30th first. They've given the citizens till November 30th to file objections to the plan. And it's kind of interesting that, of course, that time period falls over the Thanksgiving holiday, so that removes 4 days when people can be thinking about this kind of thing. And then they will adopt a final plan, and that that plan is not the final plan is not subject to review unless somebody objects to the plan and decides to appeal it to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and that undoubtedly will happen.
Well, I'm expecting it. And if you wanted more information, redistricting.state.pa.us. We've got a link to that website. Again, redistricting.state.pa.us. We've got a link. You can take a look at the map. There's some interactive stuff there and a place for you to make a comment. Laura, I appreciate the time.
Well, can I just mention that we also have a website?
Sure.
It's called fairshakepa.org.
And we will make sure that we link that. Fair Shake.
Fair Shape, S-H-A-P-E.
Okay. All righty.
Oh, Fair Shape, P-A.
All right.
All one word.
And we will make sure, we will make sure we get that up on the website. I appreciate it. Laura Lavin, thank you so much for the time.
Okay, I appreciate the opportunity.
All
thanks
right.
a lot.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Oh, joy! The generous gods of political commentary love me. The polygods have delivered a magnificent gift for me, Newt. Yes, Newt Gingrich is back. Just 3 months ago, the presidential campaign of this corrupt, super bloated ego on legs had imploded. And commentators like me lost a surefire source of goofy material. Lo and behold, though, as Rick Perry stumbled over his own brain and as Herman Cain fumbled with Libya and several women, the Newt has been ascendant, now topping some polls in the GOP contest. Explaining this exalted status, the former House Speaker was typically modest. "I don't think there's anybody in the race with my background," he bloated. "I have a Ph.D. in American history. I've written 24 books, 7 documentary films." Yes, and he's also been fined $300,000 by his own House Ethics Committee for official corruption. Speaking of which, after an inglorious exit from Congress, Gingrich parlayed his legislative connections into the lucrative life of a Washington influence peddler, carrying water for such corporate favor seekers as IBM and Microsoft. Now we learn that he also quietly did chores for mortgage giant Freddie Mac, a firm he had blasted publicly. He even condemned Barack Obama in 2008 for taking campaign donations from the corporation's executives. Gingrich recently tried to dismiss his own involvement with Freddie Mac, saying his role there was short and minor. Really? No. It turns out he worked with them for 6 years and was paid at least $1.6 million. Nonetheless, filled with his own wondrousness, Newt insists that voters will actually appreciate his work as a hired huckster for corporate interests. "It reminds people that I know a great deal about Washington," he said, cluelessly. This is Jim Hightower saying, thank you, political gods. This is going to be fun.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. And I look at this, this gerrymandering, this rigging, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, anytime you give politicos who have all the power, anytime you give them the power to choose their own destiny, do you think you're going to play into that? Look, I've always believed gerrymandering is political corruption, even if our last guest wasn't going to go there with me. Because, you know, when they get the chance to pick voters, they're going to pick their voters. And who are we going to get to pick? And it doesn't matter. If we're Republicans, Democrats, it doesn't matter. They were going to do it either way. And it's to make sure that the incumbents are well taken care of. And, I mean, you look at this shift from west to east, all this gerrymandering going on. You look at the 15th district. Man, well, it is what it is. And, again, Arizona, the Supreme Court had reversed Brewer's impeachment of the woman who was the independent chairwoman of the redistricting commission, a woman named Colleen Mathis. Because evidently, according to Brewer, it wasn't fair to Republicans. So I guess it wasn't fair enough. So maybe she was going to lose a couple of seats. Who knows? But if you look at the numbers, what I'm more worried about, I'm not worried about politicians losing their jobs. I'm worried about the middle class. I'm worried about people like you and me. And a new report just came out, and I think we talked about it the other day. It's by Stanford University that said, you know, a third of American families either lived in affluent areas or in poor areas. And what you've seen is you've seen that middle class being squeezed out. Back in 1970, you had almost two-thirds of the population living in middle-class neighborhoods. Now you've got this squeeze going on, and what this report found is that we're down to about 44%. So we've seen a massive shift in wealth upward, and that means the middle class is getting squeezed out. And it comes down to some very interesting policy for me. And, you know, I happen to be listening to Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin. If you remember him, remember Robert? But he was asked this question.
What's your view on Occupy Wall Street?
I think they've identified issues that are really serious social and economic issues in this country. We have had falling median real wages for better than 30 years, except for that period in the 90s, the second half of the 90s when the recovery had taken hold and we had really tight labor markets. So I think they've identified issues that are really central to what's going to happen to our economy and our society. The question is what you do about them, and that's a very complex question, Christian. But I think the issue.
And, you know, it is a complex question, but, you know, the idea is, and he goes into a longer explanation of being a part of a global economy, of, you know, areas like China and India, places that have wage pressure downward, because we've put ourselves in a position where we're competing with people who, quite frankly, don't have the standard of living that we have. And, you know, when you sit and you look at the competition that we've been allowed to put ourselves into, it's kind of frightening. They have really thrust us into an arena where we really can't win without losing who we are. And I think of Jim DeMint saying, well, you know, what do we want to be, Europe or do we want to be America? And I ask that question back. Do we want to be the America that my grandfather's generation built? One where if you worked hard, you got ahead? Or one like it is we're turning into now, where no matter how hard you work, no matter what you do, you're not getting ahead. And the Stanford poll study just shows it. The middle class is being eviscerated. And these people in the streets who the right wing and the Fox News and the Gingriches of the world are mocking, these people get it. This isn't the America that they grew up believing in. And you got to give some politicians who get it with them credit. And I look at Illinois Governor Pat Quinn, who says, look, you know what they're doing? It's the American way. It's what Americans do. He said, I think it's very important sometimes to walk, to assemble, to use the power of speech, press. That's the American way. He said it's very healthy. And I think it's to let people on Wall Street know that, you know, some mistakes were made. And in the past, that hurt lots of Americans, and we're not going to let them do it again. I think that's the important part. It is the American way. This is America, even if Jim DeMint doesn't see it that way. So I go back. I ask the question. You know, what kind of America do we want? What kind of a nation do we want to have? Do we want to have a nation where you work and work and work and you never seem to get ahead? Or do we want one where work is rewarded? And that's, if you go back to 2009, when Obama took office, the first thing I said when I got on the air the day after he took office is the one thing I wish for him is that he will be the guy who saves work in this country. Because as you know, as Ruben said, for 30 years now, for all these years, wages are declining. So it doesn't matter how hard you work, your wages are still declining. Your benefits are still declining. Work has nothing to do with it anymore. Productivity has nothing to do with it anymore. The meritocracy that they keep throwing in our face. Sorry, it doesn't help. And the charts don't lie. Up until the late 70s, early 80s, as productivity went up, wages went. So the more productive we were as a nation, the higher wages went. The more the share of the economy went to everybody. Then there became a point right there in the 80s where that productivity kept going skyward, and then our wages flattened off. And inflation ate it apart. And part of that had to do with the fact that Reagan wouldn't increase the minimum wage. So you saw a falling minimum wage. So the people at the bottom, they fell further. And as they fell, and the importance of the minimum wage is when that guy at the bottom gets a little bit more, the guy above him gets a little bit more, and the guy above him gets a little bit more. So if you're making 12, 13 bucks an hour, and that guy making 7 gets a quarter, you might get a quarter. And everybody inches up a little bit. And that means more disposable income. That means more money to buy things. That means more jobs can be created. That means we have a snowballing economy. We have a growing economy. But not according to our Republican friends. Tax cuts. Make sure we give all that money to the wealthy people because they know what to do with it. And more trade agreements. By God, we need more trade. Especially with Canada and Mexico. So we don't get to know where the meat came from. I mean, is this driving? I mean, anybody happy that the secret tribunal ruled that our law stating that you have to say where the meat comes from is an unfair trade barrier and that we can't do it? We can't demand to know where the meat is coming from? I mean, I'm fit to be tied. And I mean, we've lost hundreds of these cases. It's just that nobody ever talks about them. Because, why upset the rabble? Why upset those people? It's good for business. You know, trade is good, benefits us. And I agree, when done right, trade is good. But when done with the lowest common denominator in mind, when done for the lowest wage or the lowest environmental standard or the lowest labor regulation, when done with that in mind, when slitting your neighbor's throat for a penny is the competition model, it's no good for any of us. And we have now reached the point. We've now reached the point where there's no more. I mean, they have destroyed the largest, most powerful economic engine in the history of the world. Think about that. You know, before it wasn't, we lost a manufacturing plant here or one here. Well, there's something will take its place. Well, you know what? China is now the world's largest manufacturer. Did you hear that in the news? That's something that we had held for, over 100 years. And now we've given that away. And I say given it away because that's exactly what happened. Now, you talk about China, you want to be worried about something? Worry about our military. Worry about the procurement. Worry about who's going to make our bombs. Who's going to make our smart chips? Who's going to make the planes and the tanks and all of the other things? Who's going to provide for the military-industrial complex? And you got Leon Panetta, who's the defense secretary, who yesterday visited up in Groton, Connecticut. you know, saying, hey, well, you know, we need to make sure we safeguard some of our, what's left of our manufacturing. We need to make sure that we keep some of our manufacturing open, even if we just have to keep it going, to keep people with skills, to keep people able to make the things that we need. Because understand, as we lose that manufacturing capability, once it's gone, it's gone. Once that generation that knew, once that brain power goes, it goes. And the more we have people sitting, the more machinists who are sitting on the sideline, the more pipe fitters and construction workers, the more people who work with their hands are sitting idle, the more we lose that human capital, the more we lose that ability to compete in the global market. And the more we become dependent on China, the more we become dependent on the rest of the world. And the more I look at this, this isn't a Democratic issue. This isn't a Republican issue. This isn't a T-Twit issue or a liberal issue. It's none of that. This is an American issue. And if DeMint wants to make America America again, maybe having the world's economic engine running at full capacity, maybe taking back some of our manufacturing, maybe investing in our country for a change. Maybe that's the way to go. Instead of having our interests all over the world and protecting multinational corporations around the globe, why don't we protect corporations here at home? You know, I love that military interventionist mentality. Oh, we need to protect our interests overseas. I don't have any interests overseas. Do you? I know General Electric does. I know ExxonMobil does. I know a lot of these big companies do. Is it my interest? No. So don't throw me into it. It's not our interests. It's the big multinational corporate interests that we're protecting. And if they want to go into a place like Iraq or, because that's the reason we went in. You know, get over that one. The reason we went in is to make sure we got the oil. And if they would just admit that, I'd be okay with it. Because at some point you got to say, you know what, we need the energy. We can't be a superpower without energy. And I agree with that. But if you're going to have a war machine, you better damn well be able to build it. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave, make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280, or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do.
Rick 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So yesterday, the big day of action in New York, some 200 arrested. Chicago saw almost 50 arrested. Los Angeles, nearly 25. Philadelphia, nearly 25. All across the country, we're seeing people out in the streets bringing awareness to the fact that bridges are crumbling, and that was part of the day of action, highlighting the fact that our infrastructure is falling apart. So for their trouble, for pointing out the fact, they get locked up and thrown away. And what I find interesting, I saw this story in New York where one of the churches there have allowed some of the Occupy people to come and find sanctuary. The United Methodist Church of St. Paul and St. Andrew, which I guess is pretty close to Zuccotti Park, had some 40, 50 protesters who spent Wednesday night sleeping there. Well, according to the people at the church, a couple of police officers came in because they wanted to use the claim they wanted to use the bathroom, and they entered the sanctuary, and one was by the door while the other one was walking up and down the aisle, apparently counting the people in the pews. And the Reverend, James Carpin, said it's disconcerting that they would actually enter the sanctuary. We had offered hospitality and safety, which is our business as a church. He said it just felt invasive. He said we have never had any kind of issue with the police before. Usually they're very, very respectful of church-state issues. You stop, you think about some of the... Really? The cops are not going into the churches to check on people? Scary, scary times. Doesn't that worry you? I mean, when that kind of heavy-handedness around the country. I know, those people, they're terrorists. Well, that's what we heard on the right wing today. All these terrorists, we don't care what happens to them. They talk about the Constitution, except for those people. So, there you go. A top GOP donor has accused Nikki Haley of exploiting her public office for financial gain. And this has kind of been the story the last couple of days that hasn't been told. There's some claims going around you got these politicians who are, they're using their office. And while she was a member of the state legislature, evidently, according to this claim, she had signed on to be an advocate with this Wilbur Smith Associates. And she ultimately voted in favor of something that was of their interest. And she also failed to disclose the $42,500 that she got in income. They're claiming that she also took a job for $110,000 from a hospital company, and then allegedly worked as an illegal lobbyist for the company while being a sitting lawmaker. I get the whole stock thing, but this again, South Carolina, maybe that's how they do things down there. In an email exchange between Haley and her boss, who I guess asked a meeting on the Hart Center, she replied, "We have some work to do, not only to switch votes, but to hold the ones we have." She said, "We are as close as we're going to get, and I can't afford to leave one stone unturned, fingers crossed." But she was one of the people who helped push that through. And look, maybe that's what government's going to end up being. We're going to have corporate sponsors of all of our legislators. Maybe that's... And you hear stories like this, and this is where you get a lot of the government's bad, government's corrupt, government's no good arguments from. which is why you need to have oversight. You need to have watchdog groups. You need to have people who are paying attention. I looked at this story today. A bipartisan group of 8 senators introduced a bill today prohibiting lawmakers from using any information that they get during their work as a congress or senator to make financial gain. If you remember, last Sunday, CBS 60 Minutes aired a report alleging that there were a number of members of Congress that took some insider information and made themselves a couple of bucks, one of them being the House Financial Services Chairman, a guy named Spencer Baucus. And, you know, the story reads, while Congressman Baucus was publicly trying to keep the economy from cratering, he was privately betting that it would, buying option funds that would go up in value if the market went down. He would make a variety of trades and profited at the time when most Americans were losing their shirts. So he had all this sensitive inside information that he used for himself. And he made about 200 trades during the financial crisis period, and he ended up taking about $28,000. Now, is that a big deal? Yeah, to me it is a huge deal. Because I don't think members of Congress should have any different rules than you and I have. To me, that's kind of insider trading. But of the 8 people who've come forward, 2 Republicans, Marco Rubio of Florida and Olympia Snow of Maine, and 6 Democrats, Tester, Stabenow, McCaskill, Klobuchar, Durbin, and Blumenthal. Also, Gildebrand was the main sponsor. But, you know, the idea being is, look, you do anything from now, if this passes from that forward, it's going to be looked into by the SEC, by the Securities and Exchange Commission. You're going to be looked into by the Department of Justice. You're going to be looked into by the Congressional Ethics Rules Committee. I think it's a smart thing to do. You know, because I've been talking about it for a while, and it's not a secret. When the Patriot Act went through, I remember the story coming out about Frist's office. And everybody in the office, from the way the story goes, made a ton of money on vaccine companies. Because in the Patriot Act, somewhere in the thousands of pages that only a handful of people read, was a one-line thing that, from the way it was explained, Frist had put in exempting all vaccine companies from lawsuits. Because it's part of national security, according to them. Because, well, you know, they may at some point, come up with a vaccine for, you know, whatever neurotoxin, is dumped into the atmosphere or whatever. So they're all exempted. And at the time, you know, a couple of the vaccine companies were facing some pretty huge lawsuits based on the mercury in the Tamarisol. Because there were thoughts that this mercury in the vaccine were causing autism. So there were some huge, huge lawsuits. And the day after, the day the law passed, the vaccine industry was like, hey, well, we got nothing to worry about now. All that's wiped aside, and their stocks went through the roof. And, of course, people in Frist's office, according to how the story goes, knew this was going to happen. I mean, any rational person would know. Once you have all of that liability taken away, obviously your stock price is going to go up. It did. They cashed in, and they did very well. Is that insider trading? You bet your behind it is. You know, if someone on Wall Street had that kind of information and benefited from it, they would probably be doing the perp walk. But, you know, you got this guy Baucus, who's the head of the Financial Services Committee, going, really? That's where you're going? And he got away with it. And the report that 60 Minutes had, a number of other people did too. He wasn't the only one. Which kind of explains why they're the wealthy of the wealthy. Why there's what? I think it was $9 million as an average. Why most of them are in the top 1%. Another reason why we need publicly financed elections. Just a thought. The Reuters headline reads, "The Wall Street Disconnect." According to David Mooney, the chief executive officer at Alliant Credit Union in Chicago, one of the nation's largest credit unions, he had, I guess, at one point worked for J.P. Morgan Chase. He was one of the big banksters over there. And he's talking about the culture in this article between where he is now and, well, the old world. And he says from you know, his old friends from the street, jokingly refer to him as the socialist. Because understand, a credit union, they're supposed to run their bank in the interest of their members. You know, if you're going to do something, it's got to benefit the members. While the banking industry, the commercial banking industry, he points out, well, customers are, well, that's where you make your money, man. Those are the people you go after. And Mooney said, he said, I don't say this lightly, but the customer is simply an income stream, and exploiting that is the purpose of the banking organization. And you go, well, of course it is. Who doesn't know that? And sadly, I don't think most people do. And again, you look at what just happened. 650,000 people left the big banks. And where did they go? Credit unions, smaller local banks. And you still got time. You still can take your money over to one of the credit unions. I suggest PSECU, one of our advertisers, one of the sponsors of the program. Which is where I do my banking. You still got time to get away from the big boys. Anyway, going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now. This credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Run for your life. Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. Got an email during the break. Jug points out, pass the law and fund the SEC. The SEC funding will still be the problem. Rules don't matter when there's no enforcement, and he's absolutely right. You know, you can have all the rules you want. If there's no cop on the beat, there's nobody watching. Well, look what they've done. Look what they've done to Wall Street. Look what they've done to the insurance industry. Look what they've done to the medical field. Look what they've done across the nation. There are plenty of laws. Just nobody to watch. But, you know, to me, you know, how you do this, you pass that Tobin tax. You pass that small little transaction tax. So every one of those millions of trades that happens every second, we tax them at any very small portion. I would say much higher than Obama wants, which I think was like 0.03% instead of the 0.25% that I think it should be, which seems more rational. But, you know, they can't, they're not even going to, the Republicans won't even allow that to happen, the 0.03%. Not even that. I mean, I think the Democrats have to wake up to the reality is that nothing, they're getting nothing, which is why this election cycle is so important, which is why we have to have this election season and why we have to begin the education process and tell people, look, this election, this is the big one. This is the one, this is the fork at the road. This is the one that leads us down the path to a growing, strong economy with a big middle class, or the one where we become two nations. The handful of haves and the rest of us. That's what this election's about. And all we keep hearing is, well, we need to cut spending, cut spending, cut spending. You know, I went back and I looked at some of the, today, last year. I looked at my notes from last year on this day. And you look at all the jobs that Republicans killed after they took office. In Ohio and Wisconsin, the main story of this day last year was how those two governors, Kasich and Walker, well, how they killed $1.2 billion in funding for high-speed rail. In fact, on their election night victory party speech, Kasich said, passenger rail is not in Ohio's future. The train is dead. And how many thousands of jobs would that have created? They estimated each state would have seen 60,000 jobs. Look at both of those states today. Both of them losing jobs. The economy in those states are getting worse. We are spiraling downward, and all of the investment, as meager as it was from the Recovery Act, is now being squandered. Because as the San Francisco Fed said, there's about a 50% chance that next year we hit recession again. Also on this day last year, new report, auto bailout saved more than 1.4 million jobs. So if we followed conservative world, if we did what Zach Womp wanted to do, let him fail, 1.4 million more jobs, we'd be in the hole. You know, and also on this day, the Democrats wanted to vote to extend all the tax cuts except for the highest earners. If you remember that whole debate, and in essence, they eventually caved. But that was the argument back then. Had we not extended those tax breaks to the top 1%, to the top 2% at the time we were talking about, we wouldn't be in as deep a mess as we're in now. We'd have money to invest in roads and bridges and in infrastructure. But no, we can't do that. No. That would be asking those very wealthy people who've been doing very, very well and living very comfortably during all of this recession while everybody else is struggling. That would be asking them to do a little bit more. And all I hear the Republicans talking about and all these idiots on right-wing radio, they're going to take from me. No, stupid. You're the one who's going to do better in this equation. It's frustrating. You know, you could get jobs. You could get people back to work, building the infrastructure. All of those small businesses. We talked to Representative Scott Conklin. He was talking about his he and his wife have a small little shop. where they sell trinkets, you know, little candles and potpourri and, you know, disposable income stuff. And he says, you know, they're doing okay, but if people had some disposable money in their pocket, they'd be doing a lot better. And those are the kind of things that happen when you have a growing economy. Also on this day last year, 7-Eleven sent a caravan of five Slurpee trucks to D.C. for the Slurpee Summit. And they gave Boehner and Obama a special gift, their very own hand-blown Slurpee cup. So there you go, this day in history. And, you know, I go back to this, and if we could just get a jobs bill. You know, we did the God thing, and I said this before. Let's emulate a good socialist Republican like Dwight David Eisenhower. 1956, this week back then, they did the God thing. Let's do the building thing. Pass the largest infrastructural improvement bill probably in the history of the country by building the interstate system. Vision. You know, I worry that we've lost our vision. I worry that we've lost our ability to take on big projects and to see things in terms of we can do this in big numbers. Anyway, some interesting news coming out of Nevada. They are indicting two of the robo people. This lending processing service, two of their title officers have been arrested, and they're going to be charged because, well, fraud. You're signing documents that, you didn't really have the right information for. And, you know, in some cases, they were signing the other people's signatures as well. They engaged in schemes to file tens of thousands of fraudulent foreclosed documents. The guy's name is Gary Trafford and Jerry Shepard. They told their employees, yeah, go ahead, notarize all those documents. God, yeah, sure, you know, put in that false recording stuff, make the false certification. Sure, we can get away with that. They have been charged with 606 charges, and they're going to probably do a good bit of time. According to the Attorney General, John Kelcher, the state alleges that the defendants directed employees under their supervision to forge their names on foreclosure documents, then notarize the signatures that they just forged, thereby fraudulently attesting that the defendants actually signed the document. So the people that they were foreclosing the homes on, they signed their name and they notarized it, which was untrue and a violation of state law, he says. The defendant then allegedly directed the employees under the supervision to file the fraudulent documents with the Clark County Recorder's Office to be used to start foreclosures on homes throughout the county. Now, what I find interesting about the article, these two are going to do a lot of time. Understand that. Goldman Sachs, the article points out, did exactly the same thing with about 135,000 foreclosures from 2008 to 2009. They will not be charged. They have not been charged. Instead of criminal charges, they faced an undisclosed fine. The Federal Reserve ordered Goldman Sachs to conduct an internal probe and to compensate customers who were wrongfully foreclosed upon. I say if Goldman Sachs wants to be a human being, if we want corporate peoplehood, Goldman and Sachs and all the people who work for them, we've got jail space. I'm sure there are private for-profit prisons who would love to have them. They've also agreed very nicely not to do any more of the robo-signing after 135,000 of them. Am I the only one who sees something's really screwed up with this? Again, you know, I guess it goes back to killing. If you kill one person, you go to jail for life. If you kill a million people, well, they record you in history. Same exact thing. Amazing stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Under attack. Stand up, fight on. Yes, we can.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The 99% asserted our right to free speech and assembly from Wall Street in New York to San Francisco and dozens of other cities on Thursday. In a nationwide Occupy Civil Disobedience Day of Action, thousands marched on Wall Street, blocking all stock exchange entry points at one time. As police arrested hundreds and used physical force to try to quash them, the 99% reclaimed Liberty Square by taking down police barricades. People's mics were used at the barricades to express frustration at an unfair economy. Occupy Wall Street's live web stream described police attempting to use the barricades to drive protesters away from Liberty Square.
Cocked his arms back, lunged forward, and knocked a photographer to the ground. I then watched another member of the press be grabbed by the arm and thrown about 10 feet. You can see the officers and the helmets and the visors are lining the barricades on this side. There's a sign. It says, arrest one of us, two more appear. You can't arrest an idea.
Unions organized a rally in New York's Foley Park, and 99 protesters planned to occupy the Brooklyn Bridge and be arrested. Thousands also marched in San Francisco, where Occupy protesters took over a Bank of America branch. Chanting and carrying signs, they set up a tent in the lobby. Police arrested about 100 people. It took 40 cops 4 hours to clear Occupy people from that bank. In Portland, Oregon, Occupy protesters closed Steel Bridge. Labor joined and supported the nationwide Occupy Day of Action on Thursday. Out-of-pocket costs for health care have jumped substantially over the last decade. Jesse Russell reports.
With more employers shifting the burden of health care costs to employees, the cost of health insurance premiums skyrocketed by 63% between 2003 and 2010. A new study by the Commonwealth Fund found that the cost of providing a family insurance plan jumped by 50% during those 8 years. The study researched state-by-state costs and found across the board out-of-pocket premiums increases. The highest premiums paid by workers were in Maine, Texas, Florida, and Virginia, while Michigan, Montana, and Vermont had some of the lowest. The highest was Wyoming, where workers pay on average $1,479 for health care premiums. In 29 of the states, the out-of-pocket costs broke the $1,000 mark. The Commonwealth Fund said that if costs continue to increase at the current rate by the year 2020, the premium for a family plan could reach $24,000.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Got an email during the break. Anytime, he says, anytime, I mean anytime, you hear about an internal probe, it really means a cover-up. This is how Goldman Sachs and Wall Street works. Let us regulate ourselves, BS. It means to squash an investigation, sweep it under the rug. Well, it's true. Internal probe also means, something else, but we won't go there. But never to them, always to us. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Lori on line one. How you doing tonight, Lori?
Hi, Rick. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I am great and getting better every day.
Great. Good to hear. So I just wanted to tell a little story about why I was so proud of my mom, why she's the coolest lady on the earth because of what she did at the Occupy, at the eviction of the Occupy Harrisburg thing today.
Was she there?
She was there because I could not get over there, so I called her and I said, Mom, I'm worried that it could get ugly and that, you know, there's young people over there who could get hurt. And can you go? And she called, she immediately went over. My mom was a lifelong social worker. She loves young people. And she gets over, she's 70 years old, she gets over there and she calls me on the phone and she's being my witness. I'm taking notes and she's reporting on what's happening as the cops are surrounding the tent. And it's killing her. She says, I can't stand this. They're doing this. They're willing to be arrested, you know, for their principles here, all these young people. And she just couldn't handle it. And I'm on the phone with her, and I heard the thing that no daughter ever really wants to hear her 70-year-old mom saying at an Occupy movement. She goes, "I can't stand it anymore. I'm getting arrested." Click.
Wow.
She hung up on me. I'm like, oh, my God, Mom. I mean, you know, it's, what, you know, I pictured the 84-year-old woman who got pepper sprayed. The other day. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that. Did they throw her to the ground and beat her?
No, actually, the cops were pretty peaceful in this. They backed out. They backed out. The people were linking arms, including my mom, with all the you know, young men and women there, and they were chanting. And the cops, after you know, surrounding them, backed down and didn't arrest anybody.
Well, good for her. Absolutely good for her.
Yeah, she's my hero.
I got to be honest, she's my hero now too. Tell her I'm extremely proud of her and thank you for her willingness to stand up and fight back.
Well, you know, she just looked at the young people, and she honestly believes you can't just let it up to them. It's not fair to make them bear the full burden, and yeah. That's what she said.
Beautiful. Thank you, Laura. I appreciate the story.
All right. Thanks a lot. You have a great night.
You too. That's a fantastic story. You know, I hope when I'm 70 years old, I hope I get to be 70 years old. But I hope if I get there, that I have that kind of courage, that I have that kind of will. Good for her. And you know, you look at that and you go, it's kind of dumb that they went and did it anyway. That the cops threw them out of there. They weren't bothering anyone. And that's the part that gets me. All of this heavy-handedness. Really is unnecessary. Just completely unnecessary. I don't know if you've seen, but Herman Cain, it is being reported, he's going to be the first presidential candidate of the Republican variety to get himself a Secret Service detail. Not so sure, you know, who knows, but this is what's being reported. The earliest that a candidate has received Secret Service protection was 18 months, which, of course, was President Obama's detail, because he actually got some death threats. Now, the early reports are happening. They're saying that Cain asked for the security detail because, well, a pushy media. The media is being pushy. Oh, my goodness. Politico had a report today that Herman Cain mused in his book, This is Herman Cain, what he would want his Secret Service code name to be, which, you know, I got to kind of laugh about it. He wants to be called Cornbread. His Secret Service name is going to be, according to him, if he has his way, Cornbread, because he tells a story. I guess he was going to a funeral, an aunt's funeral somewhere, and I guess in Memphis, and they went from Atlanta to Memphis in a convoy of Cadillacs, and they had a CB, and they were communicating with each other, and he chose the handle of Cornbread because he says he loves cornbread. So that's what his handle is. And good for Cornbread. So from now on, he will be known as Cornbread. And Cornbread thinks that we should allow the states to legalize pot. So good for Cornbread, because it's good for business, according to him. So good for him. I guess, you know, have a little pot, a little cornbread. Kind of works there. Also, if you saw the new tunnel that they found in Mexico, coming from Mexico to the U.S. border down in Southern California, the tons, they had, 14 tons of marijuana they found. I guess that was in the Mexican side, and another 6.5 tons in the American side. So you're talking about over 20 tons of marijuana. Just think how much cornbread he could eat then. But Mr. Cornbread, you know, he keeps stepping in it. And you got to give him credit, because, you know, he's willing to step in it early and often. But he was talking about the Libya flub. And do you remember the whole Libya thing where he was asked a very simple question and, well, just could not find the answer. So he goes on, and he comes in, and he does this appearance where he's...
No, the Libya question...
Well, he's going to answer the Libya
question. The question was too broad.
Uh-huh.
Now, I do admit that I was a bit fatigued.
Fatigued?
But the question was too broad, and so I paused, and what they didn't show was I asked the reporter to be more specific.
No, Herman. I specifically remember playing you asking for clarification. You were reaching. You were stumbling. You were reaching. Crickets chirping. Smoke coming out of the ears. I remember the fire burning, looking for something, anything. You had not a clue. It's always nice to come back the next day and rewrite history, but that's not how it worked. But I love more of his explanation.
Well, he didn't get more specific. His question was, and I hope you all show this or write about it.
I did.
Do you agree or disagree with President Obama on Libya?
Do you agree or disagree with President Obama on Libya? That's a pretty straightforward question. I think it's a pretty simple question. Do you agree? Well, no. He goes on.
What part?
Oh, what part? He wants specifics. The guy asked you a simple question. Do you agree with what the president did? That's your job to say, well, this is what I would have done differently. Here's the situation. He's giving you an open-ended softball, beach ball-sized question. You're the one who goes on and says, well, you know, the Taliban's all over the place. Again, the Taliban, in this clip, he says, you know, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and all these people are in Libya. No. The Taliban is not in Libya. But, you know, that's what he's pushing. So, you know, if you think about it, well, let me play it for you so you have the right clip.
Okay, Libya.
Okay. Now, he's been asked the question. What do you think? And here's his response.
President Obama.
Yep, President Obama. Libya. Mm-hmm.
Supported.
Yep.
The uprising.
Uh-huh.
Correct. President Obama called for the removal of Gaddafi. Just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing before I say, yes, I agreed. No, I didn't agree. I do not agree with the way he handled it for the following reason.
Here it comes.
No, that's a different one.
No, that's different. That's when Bush was in Libya. Here we go. Crickets.
I got to go back. See,
keep going. See, he's tired here. He's fatigued.
Got all this stuff twirling around in my head.
Twirling. Cornbread. Thinking about the cornbread.
Specifically. What did you ask me? Did I agree or not disagree with Obama?
Why don't you just have him answer the question for you? Because I think that would have probably been easier. Just, you know, what do you think I think? Just write whatever. So what he's done now is, I guess he's no longer going to be taking these editorial board meetings for an hour. He's put himself on for 20 minutes. So now you can ask the question, do you agree or disagree? And he'll say no. Next. Because he really doesn't have the depth. Now, understand, I wasn't thrilled with what Obama did in Libya either, but I said from the beginning, I don't have all the information. I would have liked to have known who the players were, and I'm sure the information was there. I did not want to put people on the ground. But he doesn't go into that. And what I love, and like Willie Nelson said, you know, it's fun watching these guys screw up and then try and dig themselves out of it. And Kane's been just a master at it, and he's plummeting because of it. He keeps screwing up and keeps going falling backwards. So I think he's pretty well done. I think he's not going to dig his way out of it because he doesn't have a ground game. This was a book tour. I think he's shocked that anybody ever imagined that he was going to do this well. What I think he's gearing for is that TV gig. Because he was a radio host for a while. This was a nice stepping stone into something bigger. And I think it's going to give him a TV gig and he'll be able to stoke his ego because this part of me thinks he's kind of an egomaniac. He'll do very well as a pundit on Fox News. And he's throwing out his street cred. And I think he's going to be, I think he'll do a nice job as a pundit. As a president, no. As a president, he scares the hell out of me. Because he's about an inch deep. And maybe he was a good CEO. Maybe he did a nice job of slinging pizza. But he scares me on a whole bunch of levels. But the guy who's been rising in all this is Newt Gingrich. I was thinking about it today. You know, the guy who's got to be just kicking himself in the behind is Tim Pawlenty. Because if he had just hung around while all these guys, other people were, I mean, really doing the worst possible job ever. I mean, Gingrich was dead 2 or 3 weeks ago. I mean, he was nowhere in the polls. He was, I mean, I guess I got to give Santorum credit, because if this plays out long enough, maybe Santorum rises to the top. If they screw up enough, and it looks like Gingrich is screwing up as well with this Freddie and Fannie thing, saying, well, you know, I'm just a historian. Now the more we find out, a historian doesn't get $1.6 million. He was actually there in the capacity as a lobbyist, although he wasn't a registered lobbyist. So how much backdoor dealing was going on there? Another question that was going to get fleshed out. Understand, the media, that's what they do. They prop you up, and then they start looking into you. And they've all got the ghosts, man. So saying, well, you know, they create you to tear you down. Yeah, they do. You want to be the guy? Okay, let's take a look at you. Let's inspect the chicken. A little bit too many droppings there. We got to move on. And this whole thing with the health care bill. Gingrich was one of the first guys to require the individual mandate. And in fact, the David Korn over at Mother Jones discovered that, like Newt Gingrich of 3 years ago, the former speaker's for-profit think tank, the Center for Health Transformation, also promotes the individual mandate as one of their keys to health reform. In fact, box one, individual rights, responsibilities, and expected behaviors require that anyone who earns more than $50,000 a year must purchase health insurance or post a bond. And if you go back to 1993, he says, I'm for people, individuals, exactly like automobile insurance, individuals having health insurance and being required to have health insurance. That's what he said. He said that on Meet the Depressed. But now, you know, since we've got to go after Obama and you've got to do everything anti-Obama, because that's what the Herman Cain train was thinking. Okay, well, here's another issue. How do I make it that I'm against Obama? And finally, Jack Abramoff's been making the circuit, and good for him. He's asking the question, why are people looking into Newt Gingrich? He's corrupt. And, well, I guess it falls under the takes one to know one kind of category. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Oh, joy. The generous gods of political commentary love me. The polygods have delivered a magnificent gift for me, Newt. Yes, Newt Gingrich is back. Just 3 months ago, the presidential campaign of this corrupt, super-bloated ego on legs had imploded, and commentators like me lost a surefire source of goofy material. Lo and behold, though, as Rick Perry stumbled over his own brain and as Herman Cain fumbled with Libya and several women, the Newt has been ascendant, now topping some polls in the GOP contest. Explaining this exalted status, the former House Speaker was typically modest. I don't think there's anybody in the race with my background, he bloated. I have a Ph.D. in American history. I've written 24 books, 7 documentary films. Yes, and he's also been fined $300,000 by his own House Ethics Committee for official corruption. Speaking of which, after an inglorious exit from Congress, Gingrich parlayed his legislative connections into the lucrative life of a Washington influence peddler, carrying water for such corporate favor seekers as IBM and Microsoft. Now we learn that he also quietly did chores for mortgage giant Freddie Mac, a firm he had blasted publicly. He even condemned Barack Obama in 2008 for taking campaign donations from the corporation's executives. Gingrich recently tried to dismiss his own involvement with Freddie Mac, saying his role there was short and minor. Really? No. It turns out he worked with them for 6 years and was paid at least $1.6 million. Nonetheless, filled with his own wondrousness, Newt insists that voters will actually appreciate his work as a hired huckster for corporate interests. "It reminds people that I know a great deal about Washington," he said, cluelessly. This is Jim Hightower saying, thank you, political gods. This is going to be fun.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So this mortgage electronic registration systems, or MERS, they have won a reversal of a lower court decision to limit the company's right to foreclose on residents in Michigan. When it doesn't own the debt. And this is one of those things that you kind of go, explain this to me. In April, they voided, the lower court voided two property seizures, saying, look, you don't have the right documentation. You don't actually own it. And the Michigan Supreme Court reversed that, saying, well, go ahead, full steam ahead. And what you're seeing is, you know, now Mears is going, hey, well, time to go. And this is all setting up the what's I think is coming, and that is we're going to see mass foreclosures in the next year, and, you know, pretty much like Romney wants, to where the investor class can swoop in and pick up this stuff for cheap, and then rent it right back to you for isn't that how business is done? Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Mark on line one. How you doing tonight, Mark?
Doing good. Great, Rick, and I appreciate the work that you continue to do for labor. I called your show a few months ago. I happen to be the grandson of the Union National League umpire, and my dad was asked me, Rick, and he actually was a diver on the dam, and he worked construction for the city.
Good for him.
And I'm also a union carpenter myself. And I just wanted to bring to the listeners' attention, and it wouldn't be any surprise to yourself, Rick, but the infrastructure amount of jobs compared to the XL pipeline, according to false reports, is claiming it would create 20,000 jobs. Just building a pipeline, if you look at how that would be laid out, it seems like that would, those numbers would be impossible. And actually, the numbers would be down to, I'm not an engineer, but I'd say, 4,000 at most at any given time. And according to the high-speed rail, China's building 19,000 miles of high-speed rail all across her country, and we can't hardly get any started. Under President Obama, with the high-speed rail proposal, we're looking at 2 million jobs, and I know you're a strong believer in that. So, you know, those are just two comparisons. It just kind of reflects the policy of the Republican, oil-based Republicans,
yep.
And then us Union Democrats. And what's interesting, Rick, is the oil that's going to come out of the tar sands, which will be shipped down through the United States to the Koch Brothers refineries, is going to go to the Chinese and Indian market. But your domestic American doesn't realize that oil is a deregulated traded, you know, commodity. So really the price won't go down. I mean, the poor people here in Florida think if you put oil rigs, I'm calling tonight from Orlando, but if you put oil rigs out of the ocean within eyesight, that the price of oil will go down, or if they think they lay off firemen and policemen and school teachers and nurses and cafeteria workers, that their taxes will go down. They won't stick up for themselves a lot. I'm a native Midwesterner, and I have nothing against Southern people, but I think the South is where the fair tax has been brought to the nation's attention, because there is so much legacy from the American Civil War, where Southerners think that tax is a Northern thing, but it's the negligence of the corporations that run the Yankee government with its Southern ideals, and not to slam Southern Americans. I love many of them. President Carter, I worked for, and he saved my life while Reagan jeopardized my life as a young Marine. But that there is so much legacy of our own history that that taxes people refer to themselves as rebels, but I didn't see anybody rebel for the eight-hour workday here. I didn't see them rebel for the woman's right to vote. I didn't see them rebel for public hospitals. I didn't see them rebel for public school. But I do see them doing exactly what they're told and using the word shut up a lot. So I wish rebels would start rebelling if they're in Quincy, Illinois, or if they're in Birmingham, Alabama, and stop trying to claim a title of do not enter with the Confederate flag, but actually rebel for fellow Americans. Stop hating folks and along with hating yourself and start realizing that we all took Iwo Jima, we all took Normandy, and they weren't Northern Marines or Southern Marines. They were American Marines, whether they were from Pennsylvania or they were from Guam. So that's the only thing I just wanted to bring to the listeners' attention, Rick, about the fake jobs with the pipeline compared to the 2 million jobs that could come with infrastructure.
Now, you did a better job than I could have done. That's fantastic.
Well,
I mean, the reality is you're spot on. I mean, at the end of the day, there are so many opportunities for getting people back to work, building new airports, building new highways, building new infrastructure, broadband, all of the things that have been left undone for the last 30 years. And I see no reason why we can't do it now other than we have a political movement in this country that's hell-bent on taking us back 100 years.
And I know that you know that, but that the Koch brothers actually sponsored the legislation, which has been ultimately approved by the Supreme Court, which were the eminent domain laws, which will allow the pipeline to go where it damn well pleases through the United States, all for the sake of China's economy. And also they also sponsored the legislation to create the Citizens United, which gives that corporation its rights to be a citizen. About the infrastructure, the 2 million jobs, you think about the barbershops and the roach coaches and the alteration shops and the boot sellers and the boot fixers and the grocery stores and the convenience stores and all the spin-off businesses and the trucks that will be driven with the concrete and all the jobs in the grocery stores that will be, that could be filled, and the washers and dryers that would be bought in the houses that would be bought instead of being foreclosed. I don't see how Americans don't know their own history. We've gone through this before, and doing away with the social fabric of our nation and handing it over to General Electric or to Sears or to Walmart rushing to Katrina, that I don't know if anybody's ever walked into a Walmart, but it's not going to be able to find anybody that works there that can tell you an answer about something that you're looking for, because they're allowed to avoid you. And that's what corporatization does to any public services. There's a talk show, Rick, here in Central Florida, which has a relatively strong signal. And the guy that runs the show, his father's a retired New York City policeman, and he's not very pro-labor, and he's a religious right-wing Republican. And I said, well, do you not think that the firemen that ran up inside of the World Trade Center, they did that for the sake of the community. They did that for the sake of their fellow firemen and for their fellow citizens. And many of the people that died in the World Trade Center may not even have been American citizens. Who knows where people come from all over the world to our United States to do work. I said, they didn't run up there for a corporation or for General Electric. They ran up there for the sense of, for brotherhood and sisterhood and the love and care for fellow citizens.
Excellent point.
I guess they're just consumers now. I don't know, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, it was an excellent point, but that's the frame they want us to buy into, that we're not workers, we're not members of a community, that we're just individual consumers with our individual self-interest at heart. And, going back to the oil thing, here locally they're closing refineries here in Philadelphia, going to put those somewhere overseas. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Those are big ones, and I'm actually on a job right now, Rick, where the guy that sits one chair over from me, he's worked at that refinery, and so is his brother, and they are natives of the Philadelphia area. Their father was a union business agent in that area with a good reputation, and they're a great family and a good brother, and the one brother has I think an official role with labor in the state of Pennsylvania, and he's you brought the prevailing wage law. So I looked at your webpage tonight and saw that you have that, and I do thank you for that. It's just that it seems like I'm 53 years old, Rick. I'm having to fight towards the end of my life for all the things that we've had eligible to us my whole life as a worker in the United States, which is why at age 18 in 1977 I ran into the Marine Corps, because I saw that we had teachers' credit unions. I was born in a public hospital. My father was a public worker. My stepmother was a nurse, and I thought public school teachers where I grew up in central Illinois were wonderful people and great role models. But apparently they're all terrorists now because they want to retire with a pension if they can and some affordable health care, according to the Rush Limbaughs of the world. It's really a sad commentary, and now we're having to fight to keep our country and our society together. And as we've lost our industrial-based wage economy with all the jobs that have been shipped overseas, and poor Americans don't even realize that under the Obama administration that the U.S. Senate tried to stop that with the hand of the Democrats, but the Republicans allowed that to continue to occur. This wasn't 8 years ago. This was just a few months ago.
Yep.
And our own citizens, Rick, don't even know that. It's really – and then they wonder, you know, when they talk to an actual veteran. I was a platoon sergeant in Desert Storm. I wasn't just a Marine, and there is no such thing as just a Marine, but I was a hell of a Marine. You know, big, strong guy, athletic, very caring, tough, very compassionate. But, I'm also pretty tough with my hands if I had to be. But I feel like that my love of country was taken advantage of, I guess, apparently for Brown and Root or Halliburton today. And, of course, Brown and Root was in Vietnam. And who knew that? And Brown and Root's in Iraq, like you said earlier. So I thank you for the work you do, Rick. I know you're a good person, and I appreciate what you do for all workers in the country, be them union or not. It's good to hear an American who is peaceful like yourself that can continue to fight for us. And I thank you for your show.
Thanks so much, Mark. I appreciate it. And don't forget Brown Brothers, Prescott Bush as well, back to World War I and II. They go way back.
Trading with the Enemies Act, and
yep.
His name was on the list. So.
Yep.
We put Adolf Hitler in power as well as Manuel Noriega and Saddam Hussein. It's a wonderful comment. So, we create the monsters and then send our Americans like you and I who care about each other
our
and the country and to die for it like your grandfather. So I'll hang up, Rick, and keep listening.
Thanks so much, Mark. I appreciate it. And again, you know, you should read anyone out there who wants to get the War Racket. Smedley Butler's piece is fantastic. War is a Racket. It's a quick read, and well worth the couple of minutes you'd spend. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
My name is Toya. I'm a sales rep, and I work for Capital Blue Cross.
If you're choosing Medicare coverage, Toya will meet you anywhere to help you decide.
I met him at food courts, diners, the parks, on a bench. And today, we're meeting at airport.
Mike was a Navy service person, an engineer, and a pilot.
I'm a senior blue PPO member.
He is technically retired.
I'm a gray-haired teenager.
Mike appreciates the visit.
It's more personal, and you can talk easier. You can show emotion, which you can over the telephone. And it's more caring.
Toya would agree.
I love my customers. I really, really do. My main objective is to show them that I care. When you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 1-888-340-3978, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, Medicare Advantage Organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
That was probably one of the best lines I think I've heard in a long time, that the rebels should be rebels. That's a great line, that they should rebel against something, rebel against the corporate overlords, rebel against this whole structure that has got us really, really by the short hairs. And then during the break, I got an email that just magnified what Mark had to say. It says, absolutely, absolutely, oil per barrel set on the world market. You should repeat this often. Oil, he says, oil prices are set on the world market. We only have 2% of the oil reserves of the world. Nothing we do in the U.S. is going to alter the price of oil. It doesn't matter how much we drill, it's not going to impact our gas prices. Simply the transport of Canadian tar sands oil to the Gulf of Mexico for refining in Texas is so it can be easily transported to Asian markets. The majority of Alaskan oil ends up in the Asian markets, he says, not the U.S. The beneficiaries of the XL pipeline are the Koch brothers and other industrial members of the big oil cabal. And, you can't argue with that because it's the truth. The reality is they keep us on this oil. They keep us on the juice. And they keep, jerking the price around a little bit. And when they get the, back when this started to go up, I said, get ready for it because they're going to put it sky high. And then they're going to bring it down a little bit, and you'll be grateful that they brought it down a little bit. And then they're going to put it up even higher. And it's going to be the constant yo-yoing until eventually you're used to paying $3.50 a gallon. Which is where we are. I just saw a sign $3.65 a gallon here locally. And yet, we've got people who are complaining and whining and carrying on about Solyndra. It was a small investment. $500 million in the grand scheme of things is a small investment when you're talking about a nation's energy supply. We should be investing full steam ahead in alternative energy. We should be figuring out how we make every home in this country energy independent. We've got the technology. It's there. You can heat your home and cool your home with geothermal. You can use solar for the electric. You can use wind power. There's so much that can be done if we had the will. And you have the ability if you had a political structure who had a set of stones and had vision and foresight and thought what this country is going to look like in 20 years. If you had people who were looking ahead instead of looking to the next election, we could change not only this country, but the world. If we could get off the oil, make our homes and our buildings energy independent. I'm not saying you can make all the cars electric. You're not going to have trucks that run on rubber bands and flywheels. It's not going to happen. But make your homes independent. Start with the buildings. Do smart things that we can do today. You know, I said from the beginning, the first thing that should have happened is we should have bought solar panels. Said, you know what? We want 1 million of them. Or 2 or 10 or 100. Whatever. Who's going to make them? This is what we're willing to pay. Let the free market work. I'm not against the free market when it has demand. That's the thing. Got to have enough demand to keep that engine running. And when it sputters, what has to happen? You need somebody to give it a push. And that's where the public comes in to kind of jumpstart, prime the pump. I'm sure we've all heard that. And what's interesting, a new survey released by Wells Fargo. They surveyed some 1,500 Americans who make between $25,000 and $99,999. Three quarters of them say that they're going to work well into their retirement age. And, in fact, a quarter of them say that they're going to need to work until at least age 80. I mean, we've even gotten it in our head that, you know what, we're going to work till we die. You know, that thing my grandfather's generation was able to do was to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to have some respect, some dignity, some quality of life in my final day so that, you know what, I can sit down and I can enjoy my grandkids. I'm going to be able to enjoy something before I die instead of being on that treadmill working my behind off until I drop. Like every generation before us had done. Think of how massive that is. Think of how remarkable that is, that at some point you're going to be able to stop working and enjoy the final days of your life. What they're trying to do in D.C., what they're trying to do, what the billionaire class wants is they want you working until you drop. They want that full labor market so that they don't have the tightening that Rubin talked about earlier. And I remember back in the 90s, during the Clinton years, when the labor market was tight, when McDonald's was paying $10 an hour to hire anybody. And what happened? Raise your hand, because I think everyone knows. Welfare reform happened. That wasn't a mistake. That wasn't something that just happened. That was planned. Labor market's too tight. We're spending too much money on workers. We need to dilute that. So kick all of those poor people, kick all of those women with children, kick them into the labor pool, which I was in favor of doing if you would have done it the right way. Which is to make sure that they have child care, they have health care, they have transportation. You give them that help into it. Not just saying, here's a job out there for you, good luck, let me know how it works out for you. Which is kind of what we did. And in the process, you ended up dropping the wage floor. Which meant all of those $9, $10 an hour fast food jobs went away. They became $6 an hour jobs again. And again began to slow the economy. Because you had less disposable income. You know, it's not rocket science. I think Mark laid it out perfectly. You get people back to work. You get them working those construction jobs. You get them working those engineering jobs. You get them back to work. It creates all those ancillary jobs. So that if Rick Smith wants to start a little cafe or a little barf wagon, I can do that. Or if you want to start a small business, it's there. But in this economy, nobody's got a disposable income, man. And the healthcare thing to me is huge. But what I love is I love the Michelle Bachmans of the world. You got to love Michelle. And I know I played this yesterday, but I got to go through this again because it's so remarkable. This is what Michelle had to say about her ideas into healthcare. Because evidently she had met a 7-foot-tall doctor. Maybe this is like the mother that she met that, you know, her daughter turned retarded because of the HPV vaccine, again, that they couldn't find.
Under Obamacare, illegal aliens don't have to pay for Obamacare.
No, nothing. Illegal aliens, they get to come free. Just so you know, let's put that right out there first. So her premise is, under Obamacare, illegal aliens will get health care for free. It's all free. Don't worry about it. As much as they want, it's there. So now that you've got that in mind, listen to what else she has to say.
Only American citizens pay for Obamacare. Oh. But any official is prohibited from asking someone their residential status.
Oh, okay. So hold on. Let me get this straight now. Only Americans are going to pay for it, and they're not allowed to ask status. How do you know? But remember, the illegal aliens are going to get everything for free.
So illegal aliens have the possibility of getting the care, but they have no requirement to pay for the care. Only the citizens do. One man stood up. He was over 7 feet tall. He was a physician in the community. And he said, I had a little lady in my office. She was on Medicare. And because of Obamacare, I had to call the IRS. And I had to get a number to put on a form before I could see her.
Had to get a number. Had to get a number. Imagine that. Under Obamacare. Does anybody want to tell Michelle that anything that happens under Obamacare doesn't happen until 2014? Everything that's already been done has done the rescission and the pre-existing conditions for infants, all of that stuff, kind of has nothing to do with numbers? And that even in the future there will be no number like she's describing? But even if there were this number that she says is true and that there's this you know, invisible 7-foot doctor who had to sit on the phone waiting for a number because this little old lady didn't have it, then how does the illegal immigrant, how do they get care? Because if the poor little old lady needs a number, wouldn't you think that the illegal immigrant would have a number too? Just a thought. Gonna take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You know, the good thing is the Democrats didn't, and I got to be honest, I was fully expecting it. I was fully expecting when I saw the email in my inbox saying, tell the super committee not to sell out. I'm going, here it comes. And I'm still waiting for it. I'm still waiting for the surrender. I'm still waiting for them to cave. I'm hoping it doesn't. Because, look, I think this has got to be an election issue. I think what's going on is not something left up to 12 people in a room secretly to take care of. This is something that has to be discussed, debated, and really decided by the electorate. What kind of a country do we want to have? Do we want to have a low-wage country where we're competing on who can work for the least amount and who can work the longest until they die? Or do we want to have a country that more emulated the one that my grandfather's generation fought, bled, and died for? Not just on the battlefield, but on the shop floor. That's the question. And what's happened, and it's remarkable to me, that the investor class, the Koch brother class, the billionaires, have done such a masterful job of really making union a four-letter word, of really making the concept of collective bargaining seem to be something negative. And you hear they've got a lot of money for messaging, and it's constant, and it's out there all the time. But what's remarkable is we buy into it. And, you know, part of me believes it's our education system. It's how we've allowed the moneyed interests to get into education and to really to pervert it. You know, I go back to the report card thing from Colorado. I mean, I can't imagine as a parent. My daughter just came home with her report card. I'm proud to say my daughter is on the honor roll. Again, she takes after her mother. But, you know, I'm looking at the report card going, if there was an advertisement on this, I would be really not happy. Because my wife does a lot of this insane scrapbooking stuff, and I'm sure there are people who do it and enjoy it, and I think it's a massive waste of time. But she does a great job doing it, and it keeps her sane. And it's about the kids, so I guess in a couple of years I'll look back and I'll be happy for it. But at the end of this, you know, she's going to put this in one of her scrapbooks. And I think if you were to put an advertisement on it, it would ruin it. But that's what we've done to education. We've so underfunded it that now you've got school districts who are looking for pennies to make ends meet. There are states, there are school districts that have slathered advertisement on the side of buses. Someone emailed me, said, you know, they put them on book covers now. They cover the, you know, when I was a kid, you took a shopping bag. You turned it inside out so you didn't see who the shopping bag was from, and you folded it around and you folded it up. That was your book cover. You got to write on the book cover. Now they do. Now we got to have advertising on it so you know who gave you the book cover. It's all about making children's brains mush and getting consumers. Is that the direction, though? You know, we have completely defunded education, in my opinion. We're walking away from it. And I hear people say, if you want to have kids, you send them to your schools. Education is not about my kids. Education is about our society. What kind of society do we want to have? Do we want to have a bunch of adults who are following each other around and walking off the cliff one by one? And no one asking why we're just walking off the cliff? Or do you want to have people who are critical thinkers and problem solvers? Do you want doctors who are going to solve your problems? You want people who are going to be able to take care of you? You want somebody who's going to be able to fix your TV or fix your car? Because quickly we're turning into a disposable society where we don't fix anything anymore. We just throw it away, go buy something else. Because sadly enough, most people can't fix stuff anymore. Because we've stopped. We've lost that intellectual capital. And why have we done that? Well, we've done it because the corporate masters have told us to. So the question is what kind of a society are we going to have? You know, I was listening to something that was coming in, and they were saying, well, you know, we don't want stupid people voting. And I go, well, who exactly would you consider a stupid person to be voting? And, you know, I have my ideas. You know, a guy who collects Social Security, has a union pension, bought his house with a VA loan, and votes for a Republican who wants to destroy those things, to me, that's kind of dumb. Just my thought. You know, someone who displays, you know, their Tea Party flag on the back of their Suzuki car or on the back of their Hyundai seems kind of silly to me. There's a disconnect there. You know, if you're going to be a flag waver, I mean, I remember the Tea Party people I met, you know, waving their flag made in China when they got into their car made in Korea. And, oh, we want good jobs! We want good jobs! All of our problems, be it education, be it infrastructure, comes back down to the fact that we have deindustrialized this nation for the last 30 years. You know, I heard someone complaining, you ever been to Camden? You ever been to Detroit? They're hell holes. Do you know why? They were the front one, they were the front lines of the deindustrialization. They were the ones who lost jobs first. And I used to drive into Trenton, New Jersey all the time. And for folks who drive over the bridge there going into Trenton, there's you know, lights on the side of the bridge that say, Trenton makes, the world takes. Not anymore. They're losing their manufacturing base. In fact, the United States is no longer the world's largest value-added manufacturer, a title we had held for over 100 years. And now we have a government document, this report on China, that's admitted, well, we lost that. It's not like we lost it. We gave it away. So the question becomes, you know, what kind of country do you have? What do you want to be? We're going to be a big, strong military country. We better figure out how to make big, strong military stuff. And you better have an industrial base, and you better have an engineering base, and you better have a lot of smart people and a lot of hands people. You better have a lot of infrastructure, which we haven't. Why? Because we've given it to the multinationals. We've said, here you go. You run the country. You're the smart people. You know what to do with the money. And look what they've done. And we need to take back Congress. And this Occupy Wall Street thing. My opinion of this is, how many people are they going to get elected to get into those halls and to gain real power? I mean, the Tea Party, give them credit. Now, they had a ton of billionaire money. Understand, they were co-opted from the beginning by billionaire money. But at the end of it, the people power have to get somebody into power and into the halls of Congress and into the halls of City Hall or Town Hall or the state legislatures. You've got to get people in those arenas. That's how we have to change things. And then you have to push the people who are there. Push the hearts and minds. You know, one of the things I can say about Obama is I think he's pliable. And one of my hopes is that if he's reelected and we push him hard enough and there's a Congress there who's going to do what we want them to do, maybe it gets done. I think the problem is after 2008, everybody went home. We could have, had we stayed mobilized, had we stayed active, had we stayed engaged, pushed that debate. We could have had single payer, had we stayed active, mobilized, and constantly on them. Instead, we ended up with something who knows what's going to happen to. Anyway, next week, we are planning on taking a couple of days off next week to enjoy the holidays, do some retooling, some new technological stuff, catch up on the things that we've been meaning to do. We're going to play some of the highlights from the last year, especially the Wisconsin stuff, because I think the Wisconsin stuff was fantastic. Maybe go back a little bit and give you the opportunity for those of you who may not have heard the programs back then. We're going to play our time in Wisconsin. Because I think it was a remarkable time in history. And I am hoping that you'll enjoy that. But we're going to take the week and we're going to be with our families and, you know, just kind of enjoy the holiday as we hope that you will do as well. The following week we will be back, to do a bunch of live shows. Again, if you want to contact me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, I will be answering all emails all week. But you know, we're hoping going back and reliving some of the stuff and, you know, maybe, you know, catching some ideas. Maybe you listen to something and go, hey, yeah, you were right. Or maybe you were wrong. So I'm looking forward to those conversations. I hope you have a great holiday, a great weekend, and a great holiday filled with family. And because it's really a time to be thankful. We still have an awful lot to be thankful for, but we can, we will, and we must continue to fight. See you. See you. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the blood of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. The must is coming to the USP.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Tombstone. If you live in Oz and need the bridge, man, all roads lead to home.